I've had a few deliveries. What have you heard?
I've got two more to come, yeah. I know I've got one definitely coming between 1:30 and 2:30, which is massively inconvenient, which is a composting bin, because nice. I'm officially middle-aged. That was a blind that's just arrived, and I know I've got about 3 Amazon packages. It's not ideal, and also I'd forgotten that now that I'm in my new house, it's on a new build estate, and of course, Monday to Friday in the day, there is a lot of building work going on around me, so you may hear the occasional beep, beep, as things reverse, and hammering and shoveling, but we'll muddle through.
I've just had some deliveries. I had some this morning, so I was expecting... It was quite a few random things from random places, but I've just had these really cool... I was just about to tweet them, but I haven't had time yet. They're Wrapping Soul shoes. Have you seen those? Have you heard of those?
I can't say that I have. Oh, actually, maybe I have. Maybe I looked at these just yesterday. Are these the French slippers that like are lace that go around?
Well, not lace.
well, not lace, but like a shoelace type thing.
No. They've got... It's really weird. They look... If you look at them when they're on, they look like something out of... reminds me of Dune. Remember the still suits in Dune?
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of that sort of real lots of ridges and things. But basically, they're like... you get proper grip sole, and then they've got these sort of two... It's a rubber plus some sort of material that basically... I can't really describe it very well, but it's... I guess if you open them up, if you sort of opened it flat, it would be like a V shape, and then you pull the two Vs across... So one V goes across your ankle to the left, the other V goes across to the right, Velcro's in place and effectively wraps your foot completely. So what you end up with is they're size based, obviously, but there's a tolerance there because you can adjust the strap, you can adjust that wrap to fit. And I've got them on now actually, and they feel pretty good. I mean, I think if I stub my toe, I'll feel my toe stub. it will hurt. it's literally like it's like being barefoot but with proper grips on your feet and a bit of protection from maybe stabbing things or something. But I think if you sort of kick something, like if you accidentally kicked a stone or something, you're going to feel it. But they're quite comfy, actually. So that's quite nice. And then I've got a few crazy iPad deliveries coming. I think the one coming this afternoon is the classic Apple situation where my 10.4-inch or whatever it is, 10.5, my 10-inch iPad keyboard's going to arrive a week before or a few days before the actual iPad arrives.
That's always the worst.
And then I've ordered... So I've got the 12, we'll talk about this, I guess, probably in a minute, but I've basically ordered the big iPad and the smaller and the 10 inch. And my wife is going to have my old 2 Pros. Now I've had them sort of without back protectors, I've got the keyboard covers, but I've got no shell protectors and I've got no screen protectors on them. But hers can sometimes get grabbed by the kids. So the other deliveries today were screen protectors and... back protectors for the two ones that she's going to get, and the 12.9 inch screen protector thing is this it looks like a painting's come, you know, it's an enormous. that is probably going to take me about half an hour to get on and remove all the dust particles and everything, but it should be fun.
I've never bothered using the screen protectors. So you've got two iPads each.
So she's got she usually get what basically happens is each year for the iPhones, I now buy two iPhones. So, you know, get an iPhone 7 each and she gets the iPhone 7, I get the iPhone 7 done. In the past, it used to be I was the one upgrading, so she'd always get like my old... She'd get the 6 when I got the 6S or whatever.
Yeah.
With the iPads, I bought her... with the iPads, she gets knockdowns or pass downs or whatever. So I did buy her once, I think, an iPad mini for a birthday. Yeah. But nowadays, it's like she gets the pass me down. So she's been eagerly wanting the 12.9. With the keyboard.
My curiosity was more that you've got a 12.9 and a 10.5, and she's getting a 12.9 and a 9.7, so you're going to have 4 iPads between you.
Yeah, and she's got a mini as well, and obviously, I've got a mini. But it's interesting. I know, it's very indulgent and self...
I barely even use one iPad.
I use the excuse that I buy a load for, you know, for air quotes, testing. But actually, I used to love the Mini. The Mini was I really wanted the Mini even when it was non-Retina, you know, even though we had Retina devices.
Yeah.
And I kept going into the shop and seeing the non-Retina and like, I really want this size, but I can't stand looking at that screen because everything else I've got is Retina. So when the Retina one came out, I went for it. And I used to love that. That used to be my main iPad that I would end up using, because I've got, you know, I think that was before the 7 as well, so it was the, or before the 6 sort of size, so it was the sort of iPhone 5 size iPhone, and then the MIDI was a good comrade to that. So then when the 7 came out and was a bit bigger, or the 6 came out and that sort of size was a bit bigger, then the MIDI is, okay, it's still bigger, but it's still, well, it is considerably bigger, but it's, I find it now less usable than the 9-inch Pro.
Yeah.
So what I ended up doing was, when I was traveling, I was at one point, which was, I now realize was fairly crazy, I was traveling with a MacBook Pro plus the 12.9, which just seems really crazy to carry two big screens. So what I ended up doing, just for weight and everything, was just taking the MacBook Pro and the 9.7. And that seems, when I'm traveling, that's the one I usually take, because the Mini I just think is a bit too small. And the Pro's got the pencil support and everything else, and it's got the nice keyboard cover, and I can actually do some stuff on it. Although I do find the keyboard just a little bit small, which I'm hoping the 10-inch is going to solve. But the 12.9 when I'm at home is great. So if I'm in the sitting room at home and I don't want to get the laptop out and everything, then the 12.9 is really nice to do stuff on. So that 12.9 is like the indulgent home device. You know, I might, because I'm out in the office in the back garden, I might take it into the house if I'm going to do some cooking or something, set that up, and that's my, you know, it's an easy thing to carry, set up, and it lasts, you know, 10 hours. So the Mini, I totally understand now the whole thing around the Mini about people thinking it's being dropped and not being progressed, because really, I mean, my Mini spends most of its time on the charging station and just, you know, topped up. I don't really use it that much. But the size, if you've got children, the Mini size, it'll be a shame to see that go, because for kids, the Mini's a perfect size, you know.
See, I've got the original 12.9-inch iPad Pro, which I find a little bit too big to use comfortably, because you can't hold it in one hand very well. It's very much a sort of sit up and hold, and so I oftentimes don't bother. I just use my iPhone, because I've got the Plus model anyway, so it's plenty big enough for reading websites or tweets or whatever. And then my wife has got my old iPad Air 2, I think it is. Or it might even be the original iPad Air, now I think about it. Which is fine for her, because she just watches YouTube and stuff on it, so she doesn't need the latest and greatest stuff. I am quite tempted by the 10.5-inch one, because it's, the screen resolution isn't as big. It's a bit smaller. It's yet another size of device to support. But being smaller and lighter, I kind of think to myself, I do quite want that, but I can't quite justify to myself getting it, because I rarely use the iPad. But there are a few things. I think iOS 11 may well change that because of all of the new stuff that they've added. I particularly like the fact that you can just get the Apple Pencil and put it on the screen when it's locked, and then you can draw a note as if it was a piece of paper, like there's no unlocking or anything. You can literally just draw on it and then save your note, and then you're done, which would be kind of useful sometimes when you just want to jot something down without having to go through opening the phone and doing all that. And I also really like the new cases that they have for the 10.5-inch model, where they have like a leather sleeve which has got a slot for the pencil at the top. Yeah, that's really nice. That made me want the iPad more than the iPad itself. I saw that. I was like, "Ooh, that's a nice case and sleeve."
But that also made, I mean, not to be humble brag or whatever, but you know, it did up my order quite a lot, because it was like I was going through stuff and I'm like, right, I'm going to get the 12.9, I'm going to get the 10.4, I'm going to get the smart cover for both. Is it 10.4 or 10.5? I can't remember. 10 inch.
I think it's 10.5. I think.
Okay, so keyboard for both. Now I'm a sucker for the AppleCare thing. I do the AppleCare thing because it's worked for me in the past, so I do AppleCare on both. And all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, this is like a lot of money. And then it was like, right, maybe I should add this and this. And then I was thinking, okay, maybe I won't add all that now. And then some of the cases are, you know, that sleeve I think was 100-odd quid. But it looks really nice.
It's leather,
for the, it looks really nice for the 10.5, when I know that you want to, you know, in the past, it's like that whole thing of Apple were very anti-styluses and everything else, which was mainly on phones. But, you know, the iPad Pro, especially the 10-inch size, this is what I'm sort of looking forward to trying. That with the pencil, with that sleeve, I like that whole thing of having those choices, you know, because the smart cover is a smart cover, you don't have to have it on. So when I'm using the smart cover, when I want to use typing, I can use the smart cover. And if I want to pop in the house and sit in front of the TV and do some stuff and sketch some stuff or whatever, I can just, you know, slip it into the sleeve, put the pencil in there, and I've got it, you know, just carry it, you know, like a notebook. So I do like that sort of form factor and that way of working. And I like the whole screenshot stuff. So I... you know, I'm developing stuff myself, but I also have some people that help me do stuff. And, you know, I outsource to some freelancers. So having this that ability with that screenshot thing, I love that concept of sort of, you know, screenshot, shrink it down, you know, you tap the preview, in this is in the iOS 11, you know, with the pencil, and then do a quick markup and then send it. That sort of stuff, I think, is going to make me you, because I haven't used the pencil that much. Have you got one with a pencil? Have you got a pro?
Yeah, I've got the 12.9 inch pro, and I use the pencil.
With the pencil, okay.
Very rarely, but
yeah,
I do use it.
Exactly. Every single time. Well, firstly, I've lost that little adapter. You know, the little adapter that converts the lightning cable so that it can charge the damn thing. So every time I need to charge it, I have to plug the damn thing into an iPad for sort of 30 seconds to give it a few percent.
Yeah, that's all right. That's not so bad.
But yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah. But all I'm saying is it's not something. It sits in my bag, but it's not something I always get out. And I think the reason for that is that I don't find it as convenient to use the pencil as much as I should. So the stuff you're talking about with like the lock screen stuff and the screenshot things that are going on, I think it's going to be, and obviously I find the lag amazingly fast, but with this new refresh rate, it should be really interesting to see how quick it is. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it actually. But maybe we should talk about all that in sequence and the way it was announced.
Yeah,
and
I suppose firstly,
we've had a gap of what, 3 weeks or something?
Four weeks.
So from my side of things, I had stuff going on, but also we were away for a week camping, which was fun.
Nice.
And hot for, well, part of the week was hot. We went to Dirdledore down in Dorset, which was nice.
Sponsored by the Swedish chef.
Yeah. that was nice. Although the first, we have a folding camper thing. It's called a Dandy. It's like from the 80s. And it looks like a trailer, basically, when it's folded up. It's pretty cool. It's like a TARDIS. So it looks like a trailer and it unfolds into this six berth camper. Yeah, really, really cool. And it's, you can set the thing up in minutes and it takes a bit longer to set down because you usually got everything out and you got to put it all away again. But it is it's not canvas. It's got this sort of PVC, like plasticky finish. So it's resilient to things like mold and everything. And it's really stands up to the weather. But the problem was we set the damn thing, we set off in blistering heat here. So it was a Friday, the kids were off because it was some inset day or something. So we head down there, it's a lovely day, we get there, we set it all up, it's still a lovely day, we go to bed, everything's hunky-dory, and then about, I think it was 3 o'clock in the morning, I felt some moisture on my forehead, which is fairly unusual when you're inside a camper. So I'm like waking up thinking, what the hell's going on? And my wife's suddenly awake and she's saying, the roof's coming off. And the way this thing works is it's basically one side, one heart, one sort of, the thing unfolds. It's sort of the beds unfold each side. So you get, you know, a double bed at one end, double bed at the other, and a seat and double bed in the middle. The two bits that cantilever out, one side is fixed to the roof, so it just can't come off. And the other side has got these sort of, little elastic things that hook on, and it's pretty secure. There was pretty much no chance of this roof coming off. But what happened was the sort of cable secures, or the whatever they call cord secures, that tighten the roof around the shell came loose. So what happened was the roof sort of lifted in the middle and created like a 2-inch gap that let all the water in, you know, let the rain in. And this rain was the sort of rain that when you step out into it, you might as well have jumped in a swimming pool. You are immediately drenched. There's no like drip, drip. Oh, I'm getting wet. You are totally drenched.
So it soaks you through.
So to cut a long story short, we go outside and we're bungeeing the roof down at 3 o'clock in the morning, and pretty much ended up laughing because it was just such a ridiculous situation that we were getting drenched immediately. But the funniest thing is we could hear other people who were camping in tents doing the same thing, screaming and shouting and laughing, and they were obviously being complete. Oh, it's hysterical. But anyway. The next day we end up buying this, I got DPD to deliver, Amazon delivery to the campsite. I ordered it the next day and it came the day after, and it was, one of these Coleman, event cover, you know, like a gazebo, but it looks like a dome, set that thing up, and then it didn't rain for the rest of the week. But other than that, it was a good week. I always come back with a sore throat just because you're in some little space and the air and everything. But it was pretty good. But yeah, but you moved house.
I did, yeah. I've now moved into my first purchased home, which is nice. Nice big new build, and I've just spent weeks filling it with stuff, really. It's been an arduous, not in sense of moving, because we were renting before, obviously, so we didn't have much that we wanted to move to the new house, because it's like all cheap IKEA furniture that we've had for years, and so it's more having loads of deliveries arrive every day. There's like a fleet of vans that come up just dropping off more and more stuff, like here's a table and a chair, and then silly things like the recycling stuff's different here because we're in a different council now.
Right.
And so previously we had like a black bin that you could put everything in, and then a blue bin that you put like plastic and paper in, whereas here you've got like separate red boxes, you've got a yellow bag for cardboard, a blue bag for paper, a composty bit, one of the red boxes you can only put glass in and has to be washed out, and it's quite a lot of stuff, and the bins they give you are quite a bit smaller because they want you to recycle and compost and do all that kind of stuff. On the plus side, we didn't have to pay for the bins, because sometimes in councils you have to pay like 80 quid to get your bins for your new house, which is annoying when you've spent a fortune on everything else. So it's free, which is good. But they also do quite a load of incentives around composting and stuff. Like we bought a water butt that cost like 10 quid and should have been 30 or something. And today I've got a composting bin coming and a wormarium, which is like a compost bin fill with worms, and then they eat it and give you fertilizer for your garden and stuff. So it's pretty cool, but I find myself needing lots of little bits that I've not needed before. So, for example, the water butt arrived yesterday, and I was like, right, I'll go and set this up. And then the instructions are, use a hacksaw to cut out a 10 centimeter gap in your drain pipe. And it's like, I don't have a hacksaw. I've never needed one. So Amazon Prime a hacksaw. It's like, done. Okay, so that's coming today as well. And then I'm replacing the fire alarms with Nest ones. And I had a Nest fire alarm at my old house, but it was a battery one, not a mains one. And I decided to get the mains ones here because I knew I had mains fire alarms because it's a new house and everything. And of course, it's a bit more fiddly because you have to get up there and do things like isolate some of the cables that are for making the two communicate, because it does that via Wi-Fi. And there's just a lot more stuff that I'm going to have to do up there. It's not just a case of take it off, screw it to the ceiling. So I needed a small stepladder so I can get up and look at it. And I needed electrical tape so I could insulate some wires. It's like, okay, that arrives. I look at the instructions and it's like Amazon Prime. Just have more stuff coming. So like Amazon deliveries are just constant. And they're just every day there's something small and stupid that needs to come the next day. So literally yesterday I got like £4 worth of insulation tape
and
or like screws or I need of a particular size and things like that.
Fuses will be
exactly just loads of little things. But it's been good, but the most painful bit was for the first week I had no internet. Nor did I have a desk or a chair, so I couldn't have done anything anyway. But we had no internet, so I spent most of the time building furniture and other stuff up. But now that I have the internet, it meant I could finally connect all of my things, like all the Hue light bulbs are back up and running, and I've got a Ring Pro doorbell coming today. That should be arriving shortly. The Nest fire alarms, loads of stuff like that, that I can connect everything up now that I've got internet access again.
So you didn't do any internet at all? You just didn't tether or anything? You just left it?
Oh, there's just no signal. There's like barely any. We could get a little bit of 3G in the bedroom in a certain corner.
What are you doing? Are you emailing? Are you crying? Yeah. No, I'm emailing.
Yeah. It has been pretty bad. So no, we had nothing. Which was really, really annoying because I've bought a load of Hue stuff. So I had Hue light bulbs previously, but here we wanted like slightly nicer lights. Like my wife wanted like pendant things that hang down from the ceiling and stuff. And so I bought from John Lewis a Hue pendant light. So it's a big like UFO thing that's hanging down. And essentially it's just a light strip in the middle. That's all it is, in an expensive case. But we had those put up. And then I've got some spotlights as well that are all Hue spotlights. And again, it says on the website, oh, they're, you know, insulated units. You can't take the bulbs out, and it's bollocks. You can. They just pop out. They're just standard GU10, just their white ambient ones. So it's a bit odd. But we got those everywhere. So I had all these Hue lights everywhere. And the Hue app, you would think it would work without internet because I had a router. And so I had like Wi-Fi and I could connect to everything. But the app would literally work for 20 seconds and then it would disconnect and go, oh no, you've got no internet, so you can't control your lights anymore. And you were like, but you were working for 15 seconds or so. So that was a pain. But I've got all that up now and I've got like little motion sensor in the hallway. So if I go through the hallway in the day, but it's dark, then all the lights come on full. And if it's late at night, because my office slash gaming room is downstairs, my wife's asleep, if I come out of my office and start going up the stairs, then the lights come on the nightlight mode. So it's just a little bit of light so I can see where I'm going if I'm carrying a drink or something. So that's been nice. But I'm looking forward to wiring up my doorbell and letting you know how that goes, because you have been the sole and only recommendation for it. So if it goes horribly wrong, I will be blaming you.
That sounds fine. I went through a fair amount. I guess yours is a new build. So did they have a normal doorbell fitted, or did you have nothing?
There is a standard doorbell.
Okay,
And it's got like an electric thing in there.
So you can wire it all into that. I had issues with mine because we didn't have. The place has had a doorbell. We've also got our place is very strange. So it used to be. It was a house, and then it was split into two flats, and then it was a B&B. So it's got this strange situation where our staircase is actually, instead of going through the front door and seeing our staircase, it's at the back of the house, and there's a separate door. You can still get around the house, you know, but it's got like a separate entrance to be able to go upstairs. And that's got one of those mystery doorbells outside that doesn't go anywhere. It was obviously a leftover. But the front door had a doorbell that didn't do anything. So, but when you took it off, the cables were useless because they didn't go anywhere. They were dead effectively. So I had a new one wired in, and with the ring, I did go through some pain trying to, because what I wanted was I wanted to use the ring with the chimes. So the ring comes with these chimes that are little Wi-Fi chimes, and that's great, but when your Wi-Fi fails, I wanted some sort of backup. So the concept was I wanted to have it so that it was wired into the normal doorbell wire to a physical doorbell, so at least when someone pressed the button, the mechanical doorbell would fire and you could still hear the doorbell go. The challenge I had, which hopefully you won't have, was that there was just a lot of pain in getting that to work, mainly because the ones they list on their website, it's not a very accurate listing. And I had to go through, firstly, I went through a bit of pain just trying to work out which one would work and which one wouldn't. Then it turns out I had an issue with the doorbell itself, because these things, usually you have a plate that you put on the wall, you wire the wires, if there's existing wires, into that plate, and then you slide the doorbell on and then you screw it all together and it stays there. If I took the doorbell off and put like a piece of metal across the two plates, the doorbell would ring. So I knew that that connection was working. What I wasn't getting from Ring was the support was terrible in terms of just trying to identify what the problem was. And eventually the way it worked out is I figured, well, the mechanical doorbell, whichever one I'm installing, seems to be firing. You know, this is a bloody circuit. As soon as you put these two things together, it completes the circuit and the doorbell goes. It's not complicated. But when you put the Ring doorbell on and press the button, it's not completing the circuit properly. So I figured it had to be a problem with that. So I just used Amazon Prime. I ordered another one, plugged it in into the same bracket on the wall, and it worked. So it was a combination of really bad sort of information coming from their website plus the actual doorbell was faulty. You should be all right.
Yeah, I've looked on their website and it's difficult because a lot of it is American as well, so it's quite hard to find the right things.
Exactly.
And I've got no idea what make or model my doorbell is, but as it's all brand new and built to whatever specification the government has for new build houses these days, I'm fairly sure it is going to be a common one that should work. I mean, it's just a big white box on the wall that I've not taken apart and looked at in any depth yet, but I'm pretty sure it'll work. But
they're usually Byron or Friedling or something like that. They're pretty standard.
Yeah, I think it'll be all right. One of the best things that I've done is I wall mounted a load of stuff, which I've never done before. I'm not a very handy person, but I got these really cool toggle bolts that you could basically, because it's all drywall everywhere, you drill these huge holes in the wall and put these bolts in that then like open up behind the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're
yeah.
plastic that you pull down. They're expensive, but not as expensive as rebuilding a wall if I'd done it wrong. So I mounted my monitor on the wall for the first time, which is so nice for keeping the desk clear. And then I put a Philips Hue Ambilight all the way around it. Cool. And I found a really cool app. It's called Screen Bloom, I think. Screenbloom.com. It's free. And works on... I'm sorry about all this noise. I can just hear heavy plant machinery pouring behind me. Oh, it's annoying. So yeah, Screen Bloom. It works on Mac and Windows. It's completely free. And what it does is it analyzes all of the pixels on your screen. Every 100 milliseconds, and then it chooses the default, like the average color, and then puts that on behind. And it's really, really good. I've been using it mainly when I've been playing Rocket League on the PC, and it's so nice, especially at night, because just the whole of the back of the screen is lit up. If you're driving along like the football pitch type style thing, it's all green, and then as you get the blue goal, it sort of turns to blue, and it works really nicely, really quick. So I used to have, I think we discussed this ages ago, like the light pack system.
Yeah, I had that. Threw it away.
I had that. Yeah, I threw mine away. It was crap. Because I had that, and that was all right, but it wasn't really very bright. It didn't really look as good as I'd hoped. Whereas this one, the hue stuff, is obviously much, much better, but it's just one colour. You can't change it all the way around.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, I've got those. I'm not sure if we've talked about it on here before, but I think I've talked to you privately about it, the Dream Screen things. So... I ordered these things. They're HDMI.
We discussed it on Twitter, I think, because I was like, oh, yeah, I'm interested in that. And then it wasn't. It was like only 1080p or something.
That's right. I think they're doing a new version that's going to be 4K supported. But obviously not for the computer, but for TV stuff, because it's HDMI based, I just absolutely love it. I mean, the only issue I've got with it is I can't come up with a very usable and reliable way to make it multi-device. So at the moment it's in the living room. I've got a few of them through some accidental order where I got some for free, and I'm planning to put one on the back. I'm planning to put one on the back of the Dell monitor to use when I do Xbox stuff, because it's HDMI. But the one in the living room works great. So at the moment it's plugged into the cable box. So the way it essentially works is that the HDMI goes from the cable box into this little USB device. It looks really tiny. And then you plug the USB into a spare port on the TV to give it some power. The HDMI goes in there. There's a cable that comes out of there into another device, and that goes onto the LEDs, which stick on the back of the TV. And it basically, in real time, analyzes. And the lag, I don't know what the lag is, but it's super fast. It basically, if anything, if someone's walking through a room and, the top left-hand corner is red or something, then the top red-hand corner, you get this lovely ambient light behind the TV, and I can't see any lag at all. You can put it on different modes. You can do the normal things. You can put it on disco mode, or just you can have it glowing like a fireplace, and it will just glow in the behind the TV. But if you put it on ambi light and turn the sort of what it's great for is when we do the odd 3D movie. If we rent a 3D movie through Virgin for the kids or whatever, if they've got sleepover, you put the lights down, put the 3D movie on. That's going through the cable box. The ambi light comes on, so you've got the combination of the 3D effect plus the ambi light. It's really nice. But what I can't do is I can't easily get it to work with the Apple TV unless I'm unplugging cables or getting some sort of crazy switcher, or run it through my annoying Sony audio system, which is just a pain in the backside. But all that Ambilight stuff I love. I've got Hues around the office and stuff, and they're awesome. But it is annoying. It should work offline because they've got a hub. Yes. The hub is local. The hub's doing the communication.
Just very the app annoying. Being silly. I mean, I've got the dimmer switches as well, because all of the full, like the spotlight that we bought and the pendant, basically if you buy them with the light fitting, you get a dimmer switch with it as well. And when you get them, you don't need the hub. They're paired directly to each other. So we use those the whole week, because you could literally just press the buttons on those switches and they'd work as you'd expect them to. So that was pretty good. One last thing with the Ambilight, one of the really nice things about the app is that you can pair multiple lights to it as well. So I've got spotlights above me that are pointing towards my desk. And if I put coloured bulbs in them, I could set up different aspects of the screen to different bulbs. So for example, I could set the whole left-hand side of the screen. It should take the average colour of that and use the left bulb. But for the right-hand side, it should use the right bulb, and then maybe use the Ambilight for...
That's cool.
The rest of it or something like that. So you can pair it with multiple lights as well to get sort of ambience in the entirety of the room rather than just one light behind the screen. So that's kind of cool as well. So it's definitely worth looking into. It's a screen bloom. Very, I was very impressed with it. Very quick.
Yeah, I haven't done the dimmers. I've got the, you know, the clicker switches you can get that are sort of self-powered.
Oh, yeah.
They're pretty cool. So I've got that. I've got one in the office. That's basically the light I use in the office. That is my light switch. You know, I don't use the, I leave the normal light switch on, and that's how I turn stuff off. And then I've got one in the living room, and I've got all my old, when I've refitted the lights in the office with the new strip lights that are much better and longer, and you can chain them together, all the old ones, because I was literally using like 8 plug sockets to go around my desks. With the new ones, I'm using like 1 plug socket, and it's just one strip that goes all the way around. Then all these old strip lights that I had left, we got my son a bunk bed for his bedroom with like a desk underneath. So I stuck them all up there. So he's got this really nice lighting set up in his room now, where he's got one of these click switches on the wall, and you can put it on like full lights. That's, you can put it on reading mode, you know, homework mode, which lights up under the bed. So his desk's lit up. Or you can put it on sort of reading mode and or nighttime mode, and it dims down. So it's I love all that stuff.
One of the things I've been using a lot more lately has been Siri to control the lights. I don't have the new hub that has HomeKit support, but okay. Now that my iMac's fixed, it's under the stairs acting as a server, and I have HomeBridge running on it all the time. So whereas previously it was running on my Mac on my desk, and so if I turn my computer off, then none of my lights would work with Siri. Now it's all working perfectly all the time, so I use that all of the time for stuff now, like just turn off the lights downstairs. It's just a really, yeah, really useful command. So I've been enjoying that a lot more than I thought I would. And I very rarely use the Hue app these days. The nice thing about the dimmer switches is that you can set 5 different scenes to the on button. So like when you press it on, it'll do your first scene. And then if you press on again, it'll go to second, third, fourth, fifth, and then just loop through them. So nice. Usually I have a number of scenes set up on there that are my most commonly used ones, and then just go through the switches with that. What I want to do is actually take the switches off my walls, the actual physical wall switches that you obviously normally have, take those off, put up a blanking plate with a magnet behind it, because the remotes are actually magnetic, so they'll stick to it. Because I'd rather have those as the physical switches, because then people aren't going to come in and accidentally turn the lights off, which is a pain when that happens. Yeah, I get that with like dog sitter or babysitter or something like that all the time, that they'll come in and then just go, oh, the light's not on, and they'll flick the switch, the light's still not on, and then they flick it again, and then it comes on like the default brightness or whatever, and it's like,
okay. Right, I need to interrupt slightly. I've just got a delivery, just one second, hold on.
Hooray!
I'll fill in some time.
Okay, with that wonderful transition, I'll try. I've got nothing. Nothing really.
I was going to ask, what did you what broadband what did you go with?
Oh, that's one of the things I was actually going to mention. I'm with Virgin now.
Okay.
I've always been with BT pretty much. Back in the day, I used to use BE, and that was because you could actually get your phone line bonded at the exchange, so you could get twice the speed from a single line. Which was crazy expensive, but gave you good internet. But since then, I've always been with BT, because when you move into a new house, if you go with someone that isn't BT, it takes like an extra week, because they have to go to BT to activate the line, because they have a monopoly on it all, obviously.
Yeah.
Whereas this time, because it's a new build, they give us 3 months of free Virgin. So they already had plumbed it all into the house. It's just a case of having them come and switch it on. So we got like the full VIP package for 3 months, 200 meg internet and telephone.
So have you got Ethernet ports in the house?
No. Unfortunately, because we basically reserved the house, I think 6 weeks before it was due to be finished, there was no time to like add any adjustments, so we couldn't get Ethernet put in or anything like that. Okay. But there are Virgin media ports throughout the house, although we're only using the living room one. And then I've just got Wi-Fi and home plug set up for everything else. But we're on the 200 meg standard package. I can get 300, but I'm going to, once our trials run out, switch to the 200 gamer package, because then you don't get the traffic management and you get 20 megs up and stuff like that.
Oh really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they have a special package called gamer which That's is like for when you're streaming and uploading, and it gets rid of all the traffic management. But they don't offer it on the 300 package, only on the 200. And it's only like an extra £5 a month. And to not be traffic managed and to have truly unlimited and all that kind of stuff, it's like, I definitely want that. Definitely for streaming and stuff.
Yeah, I need to check that, because I was on the 200 package, and I did... I did some upgrade that they offered that was only a few quid a month that gave you more better support because I obviously use it for work and I didn't want to be without internet for like 3 days or something. So, which was supposedly potentially going to offer me more speed or whatever, but I don't know if it's been implemented. But the, I mean, Virgin, I'm happy with. Generally, I'm happy with them. You know, it's like that typical, it's a typical thing where, you know, everything works. I'm not going to complain about it. But when it does go wrong, it can go wrong quite badly and in really frustrating ways. And I find their support process quite frustrating. So the biggest problem is obviously when there's an outage. You know, you go onto their service status page or whatever, and you know, it'll be like a broadband issue in your area, and the target completion date's like a day away or something. It's like, oh great, you know. Now most of the time it comes back up pretty quickly, so it's not the end of the world. And I do now have backups in the sense of I can tether, and our house now is literally meters away from the 4G signal. It's getting closer each day, you know. Like if I walk out of the house down the little alleyway at the end of the road to walk the dog through the fields and stuff, then I go to 4G mode. And now and again in the house, I get it. So it is so close. But the 3G is pretty fast, so it's a good backup. But I've also got I've got one of these little Huey or Hawaii, however you pronounce them, hotspots that I use for traveling, which has got a 3G card in it. And I also bought just as a side note, when we went camping, I bought a router that's looks like a normal router, you know, with two little aerials or whatever, and it can work as a normal Ethernet router, but it's got a SIM card slot. You can plug a EE SIM card in or whatever. I plugged EE in just because I wanted to use something different from the provider I was on, just in case, and set it up at the campsite with a little hidden SSID, and it was amazing. So we had like, you know, 4G internet, 60 odd meg or whatever it was, on a campsite, which was nice. It was the only frustration was, cool. The only thing was, is luckily I didn't open it up to everyone. It was just me and my wife that had access. But even then, I use an extraordinary amount of data. You know, you have to remember to turn all your app updates off because your Wi-Fi, it's seeing Wi-Fi. So it's doing cloud syncing. It's doing app updates.
Yeah, we spoke about that last time. And
I burnt through about 40 gig of data.
Needs to be a way to do it.
Yeah, I burnt through 40 gig of data in a week, and I, you know, each 10 gig top up was £20 odd, so it was insane, really. But I can expense it all anyway, so it's not a big deal. I've got these backups now, so if Virgin ever goes down, it's not the end of the world. I can still get online and do stuff. Their support. The problem I've got with them at the moment is I don't use the phone line. We've got the phone set up, but I don't really use it. Obviously use the cable and the broadband, but the problem I've got now is ever since I went to this V6 box, which is this new box, which is way faster than the old one, the new TiVo box is just amazing. Which I'm guessing is what you've got.
I was gonna say was my next point is that the box is easily the best TV box I've used, especially going from the BT one, which was just sluggish. Like, it's, you know, how like if you use like media centers on a plane and like how they're sluggish and responsive and slow, that's how it usually is. And the TiVo box is just so quick. It's really, really good. I've been really impressed.
Lovely.
With it.
And they've got some nice stuff on there with things like YouTube. So if you go on YouTube, which, you know, unlike AirPlay, if you use AirPlay, obviously you're beaming it to the device. But if you use YouTube app and I look up something on the phone and then I beam it using the little other icon that they've got in there, which is, I guess, it's like the Chromecast-y type icon. It beams it to the box, but what it's actually doing is telling the box to go to the YouTube app and load this video. So
it's like an open URL thing.
It's very nice, and it's so much faster. I mean, the old version would literally take a minute to do this thing and to launch the damn app, and iPlayer and everything's great. But I just got this weird problem now where on some channels I get this, you're not authorized to view this channel, even though I've paid for the VIP package or whatever. And sometimes you can reboot the box, which is much faster now, but it does, and it comes back, but sometimes it doesn't. And I've tweeted at them as I normally do, and they say, give us a call. And then the times that I do call, they're shut. And it's just painful to go through the process of trying to work out. And you know what it's like, you know, you're like me in the sense that we're technical, we're developers, we hack stuff, we do stuff, we build our own things or whatever. And we're not going to, we're going to do all those things that they expect you to do when you get a problem. You know, we're going to reboot, we're going to check it on another device, we're going to do all these things. So 9 times out of 10 when I've ever called them saying, you know, there's something wrong with my internet, and they're going, well, we're not picking up anything. And it's like, well, look at, you know, I've done the tests, I've done the pings, I've done the trace routes, I've done all this stuff, there is a problem and it is not in my home. And then literally an hour later they come back going, yeah, there is a problem, because obviously they're going through their FAQ, they're going through their normal thing that they want everyone else to try,
the standard tech
support. But otherwise,
thing.
I'm totally, yeah, I love it. I mean, I do love the speed, but I will check out that that gaming package, actually.
Yeah, it's good. The TiVo box is great, and I'm not going to use any of the stuff like Netflix on it, even though it's got 4K Netflix built into it, which is nice, because my TV has all of that stuff in, Samsung TV, and has the same, you know, with the YouTube beaming thing and iPlayer, it's got all of that built in. So I rarely need that in a box. But for the actual TV, it's really, really good, really fast. Definitely the best TV box that I've ever used. So, yeah. Hey, we should probably talk about WWDC.
Yes.
We've been talking for 45 minutes and not even mentioned it, really. That nonsense. Apart from the iPad.
So WWDC was interesting, WWDC. I actually watched it live. I watched it live from the Apple website, but I also, there was a WWDC.io is a website. Let me just double check that. WWDC.io. And it's got this great little app you can download for the Mac. Unofficial, install it on Mac OS, and it gives you access to content, the video content. So the keynote was live, and actually found that to be really fast in terms of the lag between the sort of live broadcast and the app. But you can also get to a load of session videos and State of the Union videos and stuff like that. You get, I think, push notifications they're adding soon, but that's a great little app. So that's WWDC.io. So you can still catch up with the keynote, but also some of the other videos that are being done now for the different sessions that are going on. Anyway, filling in for a little bit more time while Ben gets one of his deliveries. WWDC was an interesting one because, you know, typically it's a developer conference. They usually focus on software. So they're focusing on iOS 11 and, you know, the next version of Mac OS, which was what we expect. But I guess the interesting thing has been the delay in new hardware, especially iPads and refreshes of the Pros, has led to loads of rumors about stuff being released, stuff being updated. And there's been a lot of rumors about the 10.5-inch iPad, which obviously came to be. Not as many as I'd expect. I mean, normally with this sort of stuff, you get quite a lot of supply chain leaks, which there were some, and there, but closer to the day, closer to the time when it happened, the keynote, there were a lot more leaks of things like cases and screen protectors and things like that.
Yeah, I remember seeing a leak about the keyboard, and
yes,
I was like, ooh, keyboard, and I was like, I really, really want it to be a keyboard with the touch bar, but I know in my heart that it's just going to be a smart keyboard for the iPad.
Yeah,
and it wasn't. It actually turned out to be a wireless keyboard with number pad, which is just one of the bizarre things that wasn't wireless previously. They were still selling a wired version, and so it just replaced that. But there weren't. I mean, leaks always tend to be of hardware because there's so many people involved with it, and there are people in China and analysts and things who will pay. People, I mean, obviously someone working in a factory is earning, in terms of US dollars or whatever, a tiny amount. It might be a good amount for where they live, but it's a very small amount. So if some American analyst offers you like $1,000 to say,
exactly,
oh, here's exactly what it looks like, because they're a case manufacturer, and it means they can ramp up all of their cases so that on day one they have cases ready to go. The money to them is nothing, but the money to that worker is like maybe 3 years' salary or something stupid. And so it's always going to be the case that stuff like that will leak, because it's so imbalanced, the reward to risk of getting caught doing it, I think. So there's always that, but the software and stuff, obviously nothing leaks because it's all done in Cupertino, and they're not going to leak, because if they do, they will get very, very badly fired, I should think.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I think Gruber said before, the supply chain leaks versus the naming leaks is always interesting. So I think I said this before, where the iPhone Plus was being leaked by the supply chain as iPhone Math at one point, because they didn't, I guess the translation or whatever just didn't come across. So it was being called the iPhone Math when it was actually the iPhone Plus. But yeah, it's normally, yeah, supply chain bits and pieces, the hardware, that's the stuff that comes out. I mean, I guess I was a little bit skeptical of the 10.5, only because I know it was rumored, but you know, typically, I think it was around, maybe it was for the 12.9 or for the iPhone last time, you know, typically leading right up until the day of an announcement, there are suddenly on that day, I know that the press usually get embargoed stuff, but there's usually like some bigger leaks. There's some bigger stuff that makes you think, okay, this is definitely happening today. You know, this is definitely what the new iPhone 6 or whatever is going to look like. And I just wasn't, apart from the cases, I wasn't seeing a lot of that. But it's interesting. It is interesting that that stuff slips through. It's interesting that you could go on to Amazon and say 10.5 inch iPhone case and find one.
iPad case, sorry.
And it was like, you know, 2 days before. It's like, this is really bad. This stuff gets out like that. But yeah, it was interesting. I got loads of, you know, I've been listening to some podcasts today and yesterday, and hate the fact that the first 30 minutes of them seem to be the guys hosting it talking about how many points they scored over each other. So I don't want to get into that game. But I wasn't expecting, you know, I was kind of, because of the delay in hardware, because there hadn't been these iPad updates for a while with the pros, then I sort of thought, okay, that could happen. You know, there's definitely not going to be an iPhone. We know that. You know, it's just completely inconsistent. It's routinely every year. That's the way it works. Every September, done. So it's entirely possible there could be iPad an announcement. Definitely. I wasn't expecting. I was sort of expecting maybe a refresh on iMac. I wasn't expecting the iMac Pro, and I certainly wasn't expecting. I didn't want there to be a refresh of the MacBook Pro. In terms of CPU and GPU and all that stuff. And I was also skeptical of the speaker. I know we'll go through probably all this properly, but yeah. I was a bit skeptical of that because I just thought, again, you know, there's been no, apart from mentions of things, there's been no photos, there's been no major leaks of this stuff. So
just speculation stuff.
Yeah, so they must have doubled down on security a little bit.
But we should probably, if we tackle the software stuff first, I guess.
Yes.
So... I'm not even going to mention the Apple TV. I mean, yeah, they've got Amazon Prime, but
yeah,
you know, I mean, that's an app store. It's an app. It's not built into the system or anything.
No, exactly.
Just the thing. Yay.
And it seems like someone else was saying that it seems like there was definitely part of whatever contractual obligation there was to win them over was that we want you to announce this in a big way. We want Tim to say, you know, how important it is. We want Tim to say how great Amazon Prime is. You know, yada, yada. It was definitely built like that.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was good. And then WatchOS. So there's quite a few interesting things there. Like, the thing that I like most of all is the fact that apps can now use the Bluetooth stuff directly. So you can now make an app that will, from your watch, connect to the Bluetooth devices without going through your iPhone. Which is really nice for a lot of use cases. Like if you wanted to have a smart lock, for example, that you could put your watch against to unlock via Bluetooth near field stuff, then you could do that, which would be great.
Yeah.
I guess, I've not checked actually, but I know in iOS you can now have an NFC reader. You can't write with it, but you can read, which is interesting.
What, in iOS 11?
Yeah, so there's been an NFC chip obviously in the phone for a long time because it's how Apple Pay works, but it was all very, very locked down. So now you can read tags, but you can't write them. I imagine that's probably true of the watch as well because the watch will have the same chip, but I'm not sure if that is true or not. So that's good. I like all the Bluetooth stuff like that. And the other stuff, I mean, it's mainly around like activity stuff, wasn't it? Apple Watch.
Yeah.
The new Siri face is good.
Yeah, I like the Siri face. I really like that. I mean, I find my problem with Apple Watch at the moment is I love Apple Watch, love all the unlocking. You know, what I tend to do is I miss things. I've got these calendars hooked up to it and everything. And like, there's been a couple of calls with actually a couple of clients that I've been late for or missed purely because I'm just not noticing it. I'm not seeing it when I look at the watch, even though I've got that one up. I can't remember what it's called now. I've got the clock in the corner, the date in the corner, and then there's a section in the middle of my calendar.
Modular face,
that's the one. Yeah, then I've got activity and timers and things, but I, you know, because you sort of see, I mean, at the moment I've got some kids calendar in from the school, so I've got sort of 3 at 15:30, and then there's one entry that says chess club, which is obviously a school thing, and then two more. So unless I sort of actively drill in and start looking at stuff, and or unless I use alarms on events, I'm missing things. So I do like that idea that it's a bit more intelligent and it's telling you what's important, you know, whether that timer that you've set's coming up or whether there's a meeting that you're supposed to be going to or something. That I'm quite looking forward to playing with that.
Yeah, it could be interesting depending on how well it works. I never really have that problem because I don't have, I mean, I have reminders in my calendar. Like I'll have an alert 15 minutes before a phone call because I have so few of them because we work quite differently in that respect. Like I try not to speak to my clients at all, ever. Whereas you have meetings and schedules and travel and all that kind of stuff. So
I try
mine
and
would probably
fail.
be quite boring. Mine would be things like, oh, PMQs at 12. And then you're going out in 2 weeks. It's like, my Siri face ain't going to be very exciting, I'm sure. But it's interesting.
You should
When
get out
they,
more.
well, no.
Yeah,
When,
starts reminding you to do that.
well, it does. Ironically, that is one of the new things, isn't it? In exercise, like if you get towards the end of the day and you haven't completed your rings, it'll be like, you should go for a 12-minute brisk walk, you fat bastard.
I mean,
Doesn't
that
have
is
that
quite
bit, but
funny.
essentially does that.
But that is quite interesting because this whole gamification of exercise and everything, that's quite, it is quite a cool idea actually, because it's that whole thing of, you know, you do get into that without thinking about it too much. I do like seeing the streaks coming up, and I like seeing the reminders coming up saying you've done it. And so it'll be quite frustrating if you've had a perfect week to suddenly be like, oh crap, I didn't fill in that ring on that day, you know. So it's quite, I like the idea of it saying, you know, you can hit all your targets if you just go out for a 12-minute walk. It's like, okay, well, that's doable, you know,
But
just
some of
take the dog out for a quick walk.
the motivational stuff's quite good as well, how like the challenges aren't just for everyone. It'd be things like, oh, you did last month, you went on the cross trainer 8 times, try and do it 10 times this month, for example. That stuff's quite cool. A good way of, improving it. But one of the bits that I got, I was a little bit sad about, was they were talking about the Mickey and Minnie faces, and they were like, so we decided to add some more people to the gang, and I was like, oh, come on, Donald Duck face. And then it was Toy Story, and I was like, oh, that's really disappointed. I'd quite like a Donald Duck, but it's not to be, not this time anyway.
Yeah, I thought a few people thought they were going to announce custom faces, but I'm not sure about
Yeah,
that yet.
I did think when he said, oh, so watch faces is the first thing, and I was like, come on. And then it wasn't. It's like, oh, okay. I didn't think it would be, but for a little bit, I did think. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we've got the Siri face. It's like, oh, you're just showing off. Not sure about that kaleidoscope face. That's a bit
Yeah, that's a bit
weird.
weird.
Yeah, but
Yeah,
I guess that.
I think I prefer the Siri. I prefer the functional over just the visual, you know, some sort of crazy visual or whatever. I like the watch to be a bit more functional. So the Siri face definitely is one that appeals to me.
But
But the new
I
fitness stuff's
guess,
good. That's obviously what they're focusing on. That they're definitely going down that route and seem to be doing very well at it. The only thing I hope they do, especially when we come to talk about the driving mode, the driving, you know, this ability to do not disturb driving thing. I just hope they can mix that somehow with the watch to, or yeah, with the watch to say, please don't ask me to stand when I'm driving, because I still get that. You know, we'll be driving down the campsite last week, and it's like, it's time to stand. It's like, well, that's going to be a bit difficult. So yeah, that could be a bit more intelligent.
I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of stuff in watchOS 4 that we don't see until the new watch comes out, which I anticipate will probably be in September. When you're getting things like these smart bands for glucose monitoring and stuff like that, I think there'll be an awful lot of new bits that we haven't seen yet. But seems good, and from a developer perspective, there's a lot of good stuff about backgrounded apps and speed improvements. So it's not going to be quite as big a boost as watchOS 3 was, but it seems like they're still squeezing a lot more performance out of it, and the apps are going to be able to do a lot more because of that. So
Yeah, and the music thing's
having apps
interesting.
that, yeah, that's quite cool. I mean, I
You know.
rarely control music on my watch because I don't like syncing it all over. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And again, if the new watch has LTE in it, then obviously that becomes. It seems a lot more logical to me if the watch has its own internet access when you're outside, then it makes sense to me that you would have all of that stuff on your watch. Because at the moment, there's not much point because you'd have to have your phone with you to have the music to stream it and all the rest of it. So them saying, oh, you can choose what music you want when you go for a run and stuff, seemed to me to signal, oh, yeah, the watch doesn't need the phone soon, which would be a big. big boost. Because otherwise, if you're going for a run, it's a pain to have to take your phone with you if you go for a run just so you have music. And it's a pain to sit and go in advance, sync this playlist across. And the way that they were showing it was very much you have access to all of your music at once, which is only true if you're in a gym and you're on a Wi-Fi network, or you're in a gym that's connected to your phone somehow because it's with you. For an outdoor run, that isn't the case. But we'll see.
I mean, if they can get that working with, maybe it will, with the podcast app, that'd be good. So I'm doing a lot of, when I'm running in the morning now, I am just listening to podcasts because I just find it the easiest way to distract me because I hate running. Yeah. So yeah. I'd rather not listen to music because it doesn't really take my mind off the running, which I hate. So I'd rather listen to people talk. And then by the time I've listened to a podcast for half an hour, I've just run for half an hour. So what would be cool is if, especially with the summer now, so normally I'd go out running with like a light jacket or whatever, like a running jacket, or whatever. But I'm starting to get to the point where I don't want to wear that anymore because of adds weight and everything. Which means I've got to have my phone either in my hand or in my pocket. So what would be cool is if it could be like, overnight, any unread podcasts, any unlistened to podcasts that come in, sync to the watch. Then that would be great. But I don't want to have to, like you said, I don't want the hassle. I don't want to have to pre-think to say now I've got to sit here with my watch on a charger for half an hour because I need to go out for a run and I want some stuff on it. I don't want to. That's just a horrible experience. So I just want to wake up in the morning, and if there's even one podcast that I haven't listened to that's half an hour, that's fine. That'll be great.
I have a feeling that because of the way that the backgrounding works now, that developers like Overcast would be able to add that feature, because I think that they can be running in the background most of the time. So it could wake up with a push notification and then download the thing.
Yeah,
at the moment, you can't because it wouldn't stay alive long enough to download it. But I think that is possible now. So hopefully. Interesting about running. I mean, I don't like exercising generally, but I like exercising in public even less. So I would never go for a run, especially where I live now, because I'd have to run through streets of people. But we have a double garage, which we're turning half of it into a gym, because my wife likes to work out a lot, and she normally does it in the living room. But now we can set up like a nice bigger area for her with like an Apple TV. She's got like exercise videos and weights and all kinds of stuff. So we're going to put all that in the garage. And I really want a treadmill, because I don't mind running, but I just mind running outside and round roads and stuff and country lanes. So I'm in the market for a treadmill, which is really irritating that now they've added this feature where you can tap your watch on a treadmill and then have it sync the information back and forth, so you can see like your heart rate on the treadmill and like the elevation and stuff goes back to the watch to add it to your workout stuff, because I really want that now. So now I look at it and I'm like, do I want to spend like 500 quid on a treadmill, knowing that if I wait 6 to 12 months I'll be able to buy one that potentially has that feature in it
instead.
So it's like, so instead the Apple Watch has actually made me get fatter, because now I'm going to wait until they sell those.
Oh dear. No, that sounds cool though. I like the idea. I mean, I would love to get a treadmill just because it's nice. The problem is it'll be inexcusable for me because of where we live. We live in the country, we've got a big dog that likes walks, so it will be like there's no reason why I can't just go outside. But it would actually be cool to have one just for when you just want to catch up with something or take a break, but you don't want to have to go through that whole rigmarole of going out for a big walk. Especially if it's raining and wet and you've got to put wellies on and all that crap, where you could just sort of stand there, or even on a call, just on a call, you could just have a small walk while you're on this half an hour call or something, or whatever it is. And then at least you're doing something. I like that idea, but I don't have the space in the office.
The other nice thing is that you can mount an iPad to it and then you can watch TV while you're running, which is what I used to do. We used to have a cross trainer until it broke. And I used to just stick an iPad in that and I'd just watch TV while I was running, just watch cartoons or something. Something that doesn't need much thought. So I'd like catch up on like comedy series I'd not watched for ages or something.
Oh, exactly. I mean, when I used to run in the past when we lived in London, we had a sort of park, Spencer Park, that was near where we lived. And it wasn't huge, but it was a circuit you could run around. And if you ran around it 10 times, you'd done a couple of miles or whatever. And I remember getting to a point where I could actually run for about an hour and a half, which was crazy for me because it was just like, I hate it. But my trick was I'd strap an iPhone to my arm and I'd stick a film on, even though I can't watch the film, like a film I've seen before. So Star Wars or whatever.
Just listen to it.
Exactly. You just listen to it. And when you're listening to it, you're sort of getting into it because you know what the film anyway, so you can visualize it. So before you, and so you just get on with it, and you don't think about the time, you don't check your watch, you don't check any of that stuff, and you realize that, you know, by the time you finish this movie or whatever, you've just run for an hour and a half. It was crazy. But yeah, I just like that distraction.
So Mac OS High Sierra.
Yeah, that was a bit strange.
yeah, interesting. There's not really a huge amount there. I mean, there's stuff like the Apple file system, which is cool because we've had that. Like the speed improvement looked amazing for stuff like copy and paste, which is, you know, something I use quite a lot. So that's nice.
Editing and stuff.
Yeah, the thing I liked most was the improved Safari with the intelligent ad prevention, because even though I have ad blockers and all that kind of stuff, I still do get those things where, like, if I've looked at a sofa online and then you go and you're looking at a completely different website that's unrelated, and then there's like adverts for that sofa everywhere, and it drives me mad.
If you bought the sofa, you've already got it, it's being delivered, you're sitting on it, and then you're surfing and it's saying buy the sofa. You're like, oh my god. So frustrating.
It feels grubby because it's like, I know I'm being tracked, even though I have Do Not Track enabled, and even though I have ad blockers, and this shouldn't be happening still. So I'm really excited to see how well that's going to work. I can't remember what else there was really apart from that, though.
There was there's photo stuff. There's they've updated the graphics engine. I think there's Metal 2 support and all that type of stuff, I think. I guess there's going to be some changes. Maybe there's going to be some changes to messages to allow peer-to-peer payments if you've got a touch bar, maybe. There might be some stuff around that.
That probably work, yeah.
Yeah, because if you've got...
You don't need a touch bar to do that, surely, because you can Apple Pay on a Mac without a touch bar.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
you just authenticate it with your watch or phone, don't you?
Cool. So maybe there's some changes around that or something. But yeah, I mean, I think with this yearly update cycle they're in now, I don't think it's fair to expect that every year there's going to be some major update to macOS, because it's too risky,
isn't it?
Need
it.
Exactly. It doesn't it's need too it risky either. To try and load it with too many things.
There's not much to add, really.
Yeah.
I don't sit on my Mac and think, God, I really wish they had this feature that I've been missing my whole life. Because unlike iOS, you know, like a third-party developer can extend it. So it's not... It's very rare that there's something in macOS that you can't do some other way if something isn't exactly how you want it. So if you want to tweak the dock or icons or whatever it might be, you just get an app to do it. Whereas obviously on iOS being locked down, there's a lot more situations where you can't physically do something unless they add support for it. I suppose there's the Mac hardware. You sort of alluded to it earlier with the minor updates for the MacBook and MacBook Pro going to Kaby Lake. Interesting that they're not doing that to the... I suppose they're not going to do that to the Mac Pro because they've just updated it, and I don't think the Kaby Lake processors are in the Xeon ones they use for that anyway. So I'm glad I didn't get screwed over by my decision to buy the Mac Pro a few weeks ago. Interesting that the MacBook Air is still around. I thought that would be disappearing, but they specifically mentioned it again, so that's obviously sticking around a bit longer.
I guess people are still buying it. I mean, the people keep going on about it. I keep seeing articles saying the rumors of it are that it's going to be discontinued. It's like, well, surely it's already dead, because to me, the MacBook and the MacBook Pro are the line. You know, the MacBook replaced the MacBook Air, but I guess people still love, for some reason, there's still some hope that the MacBook Air...
Love them. Love those USB-A ports and non-retina display.
Exactly. So I guess it's just, you know, give it a little speed bump within its processor family and keep people happy. The MacBook Pro, I would have been tempted to replace. I mean, I only got one last year. You know, I got one of the new Touch Bar ones.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I'm the sort of person that is terrible for updating like that. So if they had done 32 gig, I would have sold mine and got a new one. Just because 32 gig would be great. But looking at it, it's a tiny speed bump. It's still 16 gig. The hard drive, the SSD they talked about, I think there was some confusion there because they said, you know, the MacBook is being updated to have a 40% faster or 1.5 times faster or whatever it was SSD, but it's not the Pro. It's just the MacBook because the MacBook was still behind on the SSD in terms of the PCI bus that it was using. So I did some
checks on archive.org to see, because obviously all the website gets replaced and you don't see the old stats. And I think there's a minor difference. They said before, I think it was up to 3.1 gigasecond and 2.1 gigasecond for the one that I've got. And the new one apparently is up to 3.2 and 2.2, which to me is just not enough of a reason. I mean, if they doubled the SSD speed, I'd have thought, well, you know, because SSD, increasing that speed of that can make a big difference with whatever you're doing. So I'd have been tempted, but I'm, for the cost that it's going to cost me, I'm going to end up having to pay, you know, £2,700 again. Then I've got to sell this one.
No point.
Exactly. I've got to sell this one at less. And it's just like, I can't be asked to go through that again. So I think I'll hang around and wait.
The thing with these processor changes as well is that the actual speed difference is negligible. What tends to be the improvement is battery life and stuff like that. So whilst if you were using your MacBook Pro every day and you were finding it was running out of battery every day because you're out and about and it's too short, then it might be a good upgrade because you might squeeze an extra hour or so with that upgrade. But if that isn't you, there's no point upgrading one that's not that old. And a lot of people are annoyed about it because it's like, oh, well, they should have just announced it now. And it's like, well, they could have just not announced the MacBook Pro until now, but then that would be a bit silly because they had it ready. You know, it's just a minor processor upgrade. There's no point not upgrading it just because it's not there.
Exactly. And it's a bit like the, you know, they updated the 12.9 to support 256 gig, and my one's 128 gig because I bought the first one. And it's very easy to think, oh, well, you know, I've got, but it's like the 128 gig's fine. I mean, the new one I've ordered is 512 because it was there, and I think, Christ, that'd be amazing. so, I mean, I went for that.
But, I use about 2 gigs on my iPad. Well, I think, so little.
But going back to the MacBook Pro, if let's say, even without, well, if they'd done the same processor or a little speed bump, I think even with 16 gig and the same SSD speed, if they'd said, okay, we've managed to squeeze another 5 hours out of this, which is completely unlikely, but if they had, then I might have been tempted because that would be quite nice. But it doesn't bother me. I don't get those battery issues that people have had. I mean, I can still, for me, when I'm not out and about, which is rare anyway, I'm usually taking, you know, finishing work at 6 or whatever, taking in the house, sorting out the kids' supper and getting them into bed, and then I might set my MacBook up in the front room while I'm doing stuff, and it will last until I wake up at 3 a.m. having fallen asleep. it doesn't run out, and the only time it does run out in the evening is if I'm doing serious, you know, coding and building and compiling, and I'm just doing it constantly, or video editing or something, and then obviously it's working its ass off. But typically it's fine. I don't really see a problem with it, and I'm not the sort of person that gets locked into that whole thing of looking at the clock anymore. So I used to do that with Windows. It was just tiring, always looking at the time left, thinking, oh my God, I've only got 2 hours left. And it's like, yeah, but if you just sit there and continue what you're doing, that 2 hours left is still going to be there for another half hour. Obviously, if you ramp up what you're doing and start using more processing power and everything, then yes, it's going to go down. But yeah, it doesn't bother me. So I think I'll stick around for probably next year's refresh and go from there.
Yes, I mean, I saw one of the laptops in the Apple store a little while ago, and I was like, oh God, I want that. But I have no need for it, really, more than I just want to occasionally be able to code in bed. But just having to sync everything up, I can't be asked. So yeah, very unlikely I'll get one.
The only thing I will do, if I do get another one at some point, is I might go back to silver instead of space gray. And that's the only thing I might change.
Interesting.
And the only reason for that is I really love the space gray, and I just love the look of it and everything. But I have already got a couple of little, you know, dinks, tiny, tiny dinks. Don't even know how they happen because I'm so careful with my stuff usually. But I've obviously, it's knocked into something, and it's the tiniest little mark. But because of the anodization or whatever they call it, that tiny little mark, what's underneath is now, you know, reflective aluminium. So you see this little shine.
Whereas exactly with my like old the iPhone one, 5.
Exactly. So with my old one, it was silver. And it also had a couple of little dinks in it, but you just never noticed. You couldn't even see them. It didn't bother you. So that's the only thing I would probably do. I might go back to silver because it just does bother me when you just spent, you know, £2,500 on something and now it's got a little dink on it.
Speaking about space gray, how about that iMac Pro?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I will definitely buy a keyboard and a mouse and a touchpad.
You can't. They're not selling them separate.
Oh, you're joking. Oh,
no, right. They are not being sold separately. The keyboard and mouse is exclusive to the iMac
Damn.
Pro. Everyone wants one, but they're not selling them.
It does look completely insane. And I know that there was a podcast I was listening to, John Syracuse, I think it was saying he in the press room where they went in, you could see it. Yeah, it was in the corner. You weren't allowed to touch it. And it was a very noisy room, so they couldn't really hear like if it was making much noise. I think he went to touch the mouse and got his wrist slapped by the person there. But he said he put his hand behind the screen and you could feel the air being thrown out of this thing.
I can imagine.
I mean, just the specs of it. You know, what is it? Like, starts at $4,999 for the base model.
And that's for the eight-core model, yeah.
Yeah, and you can go up to 16 cores and 128 gig of... Oh, my God, I mean, it just looks crazy.
18 cores. 18.
Yeah.
Which is... I got to think it's going to be pushing like 12, 15 grand to get up to that point.
Yeah.
It's going to be ridiculous. It'll be like we used to play a game when I first started working in London, like back in 2007, where we would go to the Apple website and then go to build your own Mac Pro,
yes,
when it was like the cheese grater, and then just stick the maximum on everything. And it'd get up to like 18 grand if you went for every single customization option to maximum. And I reckon this will be much the same. It'll be, because those 18 core i9 chips, I think they're going to be, they are ridiculously expensive. So,
the interesting thing is the sort of discussions that have been going on around this is that the sort of theory is that this was where Apple were going to go with the Pro line, if you like, of desktops. So, you know, the Mac Pro was essentially, they had issues with the design, yada, yada, yada. And yes, it wasn't going to get, they weren't going to come up with a new Mac Pro. They were just going to do an iMac Pro that was so ridiculously spec'd that you just wouldn't need to go down the Mac Pro route of having your own, you know, customizable machine or whatever. And obviously now they've changed that and they're going to be coming up with something maybe next year, maybe after.
See, if they had made this announcement and they hadn't done the bit 3 months ago when they said, we fucked up with the Mac Pro, we're going to be doing that. Because not once was the Mac Pro mentioned in the whole presentation. And when they showed photos of the lineup, the Mac Pro wasn't there. Like, even though they've just updated it, essentially, they didn't mention it or show it at all. They just showed the laptops and the iMac, which makes me think that the Mac Mini is completely dead. Like, there was no mention of the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini isn't getting the basic i7 upgrade. Is the Mac Mini still on the website? I imagine it must be, because otherwise
I think it is,
kicked off. But if they'd just done that and not mentioned it, I would think, well, this is the new Mac Pro, because obviously it's, you know, it's got everything you need right there. It's not for me, because I don't want that screen, because I have my ultra wide screen and I don't want to have two. So I won't be getting it, even though I covet it. I look at it. I want that so badly. It makes me really excited to see what they're going to do with the Mac Pro, because the Mac Pro is going to have some serious chops on it to compete with that.
Yeah, and it's also interesting, like that dev kit that they're releasing, where you can plug in an external GPU. Obviously, it's going to be a very rough and ready type setup, because it's for development, but it's just interesting with Thunderbolt 3 or whatever comes next, if something does come next, another version of Thunderbolt or whatever, that they could very easily go down this route of having what I guess I'd describe as a stereo stacking system. You know,
you could have
a base CPU module, you then, you know, USB-C to USB-C that into a GPU, connect that into a drive system. It could be quite interesting.
That's exactly what we were saying a little while back, and that could be the Mac Mini as well, because if they sell cheap versions of that, like, okay, you can get the really shitty base i5 Intel processor, you can have that module that's like 50 quid, or you can have the i9 18 core module, which is 9 grand, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly.
Then at that point, then it makes a lot of sense, and modular and Mac Mini and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, interesting piece of hardware, and interesting to see it so far in advance as well. Like, that's not coming out till December. I mean, that's a long time ahead to be showing off stuff like that for Apple. I mean, they do it with things like the Apple Watch and the iPhone, because that stuff was going to leak from like the FCC. But a bit weird to do it with something like the iMac. Because there's no real need for them to have done it either, because they did a basic update to the iMac line. Everyone knew new Mac Pros were coming and stuff. So I guess they've swung the pendulum the other way completely, from being completely secretive about the Mac lineup and everyone thinking it dead, to now being ridiculously open and saying, oh, this amazing thing is coming, but not for 6 months now, I guess. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So that takes us to iOS, which is pretty much the biggest thing. Unless you want to talk about the speaker first. I don't really have much to discuss about the speaker.
No, iOS 11's fine.
Cool. So, iOS 11 is looking really nice. A lot of improvements. A lot of them very small as well. Just little things that are irritating that are fixed. So one that I've just seen that I hadn't heard about, is that the volume slider no longer covers up video, which is such a minor thing. But it was such a pain when you sit down to watch a trailer in like the YouTube app, and then you press volume up, and then you get this big volume display over the video. That's all gone. Now it's a little tiny thing in the corner, which is nice. The thing that impressed me most was probably the maps updates, which seems a bit of a weird thing. But I love the fact that they're doing indoor mapping with like shopping malls and airports, showing you where you are and where stuff is. That's so useful. And like lane control when you're driving, because that's always a nightmare in a lot of places with complex roads where you don't know what lane you need to be in, and her just sort of saying bear right doesn't help when there's four lanes that go to the right but you don't know which one you need to be in. So that's really interesting. You mentioned the driving thing earlier. And I found that a bit hilarious, because I obviously get a lot of people pitch app ideas to me for whatever reason. And the number one by far that people pitch to me, and I even had three this week, is a way to stop a phone from being used while in the car.
Yeah.
And I always say that is a stupid idea, because how's it going to know if you're driving or not? Like, are you going to have to press a button to tell it that you're driving? At which point, if you've got that much self-control, why don't you just not use your phone while driving?
Exactly.
It's not difficult. Just stick it in Do Not Disturb mode. How's it going to work if you're using things like the sat-nav, or you get an emergency phone call, or things like that? There's so many ways that it doesn't work. And I'm still not convinced that this is a great solution, what they've come up with, because it wasn't clear to me how it's going to work in practice. Like, they didn't show it with the sat-nav on, for example.
Yeah.
They showed, oh, if you're driving, the phone will be off, basically. You don't get notifications and the screen's off. And if you try and use it, there's a notification thing and it auto-replies to text saying you're driving, which is fine. And the options sort of say, oh, I'm a passenger, so you get access to stuff still, which is good. But what happens if you're using the sat-nav? Do you just not see notifications? Which is fine, I guess. That works. There's quite a lot of bits there where I'm not sure entirely how it's going to work, and whether or not it's going to work like Do Not Disturb. So if someone rings you, they don't get through because it's in Do Not Disturb mode, but if they ring you again, then it will get through. See, if I have a lot of questions about it, but I'll never know because I have CarPlay, so none of it will apply to me anyway. I would like to see some improvements to that, because I do have issues if I'm driving. My watch doesn't vibrate because the notifications appear on the screen, but the screen is to the left and lower down, so I'm not always looking at it. So if a text message comes in, unless my phone isn't on silent, and my phone is always on silent, I miss messages because a little notification panner pops down and then disappears. And so I oftentimes, when I'm driving, don't see text messages anyway, just because they don't make the watch vibrate, and that's how I always know that I have messages. So I'd like to see them improve that and change something there. Really, I just need to not put my phone on silent when I get in the car, but that's a pain because it's always... I pretty much got dust in my thing, because as soon as I get my phone, when it arrives on launch day, I put it in silent mode and it never ever comes out of silent mode. I don't think I've ever unsilenced this iPhone.
Normally have mine... The problem I've got at the moment with mine is I've got... I normally had a thicker... slightly thicker case, you know, like those sort of rubbery cases that you could sort of put on. They look a bit sort of, the one I had sort of looked like it was one of these military style, not military style, but, you know, it looked a bit like it was metal and things, but it was all soft, you know, whatever it is, plastic, PVA or whatever. And I guess I never noticed this before because it was quite thick. not hugely thick, but it just sort of added probably another couple of mils to what this one does. But the case I've got now is this Peel case. It's one of these ultra thin. So it's, I mean, it is literally so thin. It's just very, very, unless you look really closely, you'd be hard to, you could hardly tell there's a case on it, basically. You know, it's got holes for the speakers. Everything lines up. The only thing missing is the Apple logo on the back. If they had that on there, you'd think it's just, you know, not got a case on it. But what I've noticed more often, like every day, I mean, obviously it's on silent now, is I keep flicking the damn silent switch. And I never did that before because it would have been slightly more embedded in this other case. So I would have had to have gone in and really explicitly switched it. Whereas I'm finding when I pick this up sometimes or put it in my pocket, I'll you know, I've missed a notification or I've missed something. I look at my phone and I can see the little flash of red, you know, because it's flicked over. And it's like, damn. So I don't know if people – do you have a case on yours? Do you normally – well, I guess you have yours on silent anyway, but I'm just wondering if it's a common problem that people without cases end up flicking their silent switch on.
I have the leather case, the Apple leather one, which is lovely with the iPhone 7 when they released it, because the leather ones now have metal buttons, whereas previously they were leather buttons. So like the volume buttons are like raised aluminium out of the case, so you can actually feel them much better. It's actually quite hard to get to the silent switch because it's down in a little hole and the case is fairly thick. I would prefer not to have a case. If I'd managed to get the jet black iPhone, I probably wouldn't have a case because that's a bit more grippy. But especially with the Plus model, I find the aluminium, and I just naturally have quite sweaty hands, so it would just slide straight out all the time and I'd drop it constantly. And also because of the bump on the back, obviously it's, when you put it on a flat surface, it wobbles a little bit, which is irritating. So I have a case for those two reasons. If I had the jet black phone, I think I wouldn't have a case at all. Micro abrasions be damned, because I prefer to hold it. And quite often I take the phone out of the case and I go, oh my God, this is so beautiful. This
phone. Exactly.
And then I hold it for a bit and then it slips out my hand and then I'm like, oh, back in the case you go.
I know. Well, it's that thing as well that I've pretty much, I think I haven't dropped my phone in a long time. You know, with a case on, I pretty much will never drop it. And if I do, it's fallen on the carpet from the chair or something. I've never dropped it outside. I've never dropped it while I'm running or walking the dog or anything like that. And I just know the moment I go, okay, I'm going to go skinless for a week, you know, and have without the case, within 10 minutes, I'll drop it on concrete or something and that'll be it. But anyway, the silent stuff and the do not disturb stuff. I like the idea of it. I like the concept of what they're trying to do. But like you say, I think it's not as simple as detecting that you're moving at high speed. You know, it's like the whole standing thing, asking me to stand when I'm driving. And I know it's probably impossible for them to work out which side of the car you're sitting on. They can't be that accurate. But it's a nice start to sort of maybe encourage. I mean, I fall for it all. I have fallen for it. I've been naughty and seen an alert and looked at my phone, and you shouldn't do it. You know, just don't do it. And if this helps to do that by default and make it more difficult for people to, well, not more difficult, but there's some effort for them to turn it off, then maybe it'll encourage people just to not do it. But the sat-nav thing's interesting. I wonder how that will work. I don't want to see notifications anyway when I'm driving if I'm using a sat-nav.
No.
It's just very irritating. Especially when you get people, you know, you get people who have a conversation with you when they're chatting where they're trying to do it in multiple sentences, like, you know, multiple posts. So you get the multiple pings. Yeah, it's not like the...
So irritating.
Yeah, so instead of just typing three paragraphs, they're like, I've got something to tell you. Send. Anyway, send. Or this, send. Or maybe that, send. It's like, oh my God, you just go ping, 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 ping. That usually makes me just switch to silent as well.
What else have we got? Siri stuff. Siri was pretty good, like the new natural language.
Yeah, sounds, I like that.
Sounds better. And... It looks like that it's, well, I mean, it's just embedded in everything they do now that Siri is like the AI, and not in terms of just the voice, which is what you would typically associate with it, but all of the predictive stuff like the Siri watch face and things like that. So that's,
yeah, I like that.
That's great. And they added the ability for a few more third-party apps to use it, like to-do lists, which is a great one, because I would probably use that for things. I don't think I've actually used Siri with a third-party app yet, because I don't ever use anything like ride-hailing or making payments or any of the other things. There's like six things that it can currently do that I forget what they all are. I know there's the ride one and the other one, but I can't remember what they all do. I just know that there isn't a music one. Music was like a key one, and that's still not there because they don't want people using music other than Apple Music. And also, I imagine there's a lot more ways that can go wrong. Like if you want to say, oh, play this music in Spotify, or you know, play all of my 5-star rated songs from the 1980s in Spotify, you're having to add quite a lot of extra nuance to that that they probably want to keep locked down to Apple Music.
I mean, there was
and even
some
with
stuff
Apple
about
Music, it doesn't work half the time. So it's
exactly, yeah. I mean, there was some stuff about AirPlay 2 and multi-room stuff, which is cool. But for me, I mean, I would like that. But for me right now, it would be nice just to be able to walk into the... So what, you know, Wednesdays normally we'll do, you know, every other week we're doing this in the morning. And then I go and do some pizza dough because it's pizza night, whatever. And when I do pizza dough, I'm usually got the Apple TV on, got Sky News on, maybe Prime Minister's Questions are on, whatever. But I'm catching up on stuff like that. It would just be nice for me at the moment. And this doesn't, you know, this is software. It would just be nice to walk into the kitchen and say, hey, Dingus, put Sky News on the Apple TV kitchen, or just stuff like that. Mm. You know, put Sky News on in the kitchen and it will know, you know, I've got Sky News app on the Apple TV in the kitchen. It's called Kitchen. It launches the app. The screen that it's connected to is in sleep, but will obviously come up and everything works. That sort of thing. It's that sort of usability. Or, you know, if you've got kids, it's that thing of the kids want to watch something in the sitting room, get them out of the way while you're trying to do something. It's like, you know, hey, Dingus, can you put Beauty and the Beast on in the sitting room? You know, that would be amazing. Yeah. And that's just software. That's just interconnecting the stuff a little bit more.
Got to think we're close to that by now.
We've got to be. I mean, it's insane that, especially with all this other stuff that you can connect up, that for me would be a real big thing. It'll be a really big thing because it's that just the time. It sounds lazy and silly, but it's like when you've got children, especially, it's like you want to set up something. They've got a sleepover, or you just want to get something on the TV for them to see. It's typically they can navigate this stuff. You know, they've got to that point now where they can do it all. But for instance, they'll tend to go straight. If they're going to watch a film, they'll tend to go straight into the movies button, which means they're streaming stuff. Now, it's probably not a big deal on the internet connection we've got, but if I've already downloaded it on the iMac, I'd rather they just watch it off that because it's going local to local. But it's just making sure they do that. And sometimes they don't know how to do that. They go for what makes sense and what's simple. So sometimes I'll then get involved and write, okay, let's go this, go to the iMac, go to films. Then, of course, you get that film list, which is completely horrific. You know, at least they can press the button and just say, can you play Beauty and the Beast? And Siri will take care of it, which I understand why they do that. Whereas I've got to go into a film list and scroll through 700 movies to try and find the damn one that they want to, you know, want to watch. So to be able to just say, and I know that this means that it will probably stream it, but to be able to just say, play it in the sitting room would be great. It would just be a real time saver. So, yeah.
Otherwise, that's coming soon because they've opened up like HomeKit support for speakers. I mean, obviously to use their new HomePod, but there's no reason why other people can't get into that. And I'm particularly excited to start hacking that up with HomeBridge with my Sonos speakers, because at the moment my Sonos, I have a plugin that lets me use them through Siri, but through HomeKit, but it essentially treats them like a light bulb. They have on and off.
Right.
So I can't say to the speaker, play this music. I can literally just resume whatever it was playing and turn it off, which is fine because I normally have the same thing on all the time. I have the radio on or a playlist, and so I can at least turn it on and off with my voice. Because like if I go up to bed and it's like, it's quicker to say to Siri, turn off the speaker, than it is to go to the right app and pause it. But you've got to think that they're going to add more stuff like that, like for the Apple TV to be like a HomeKit device in itself, so that you can send stuff to it. But it's an evolving thing. Siri seems to be doing well. It seems to have got quite a few little upgrades this time. I was particularly glad that we didn't have to sit through being shown sports results through Siri, which is the usual update. Oh, hey, look, she now understands ice hockey. Couldn't give her a toss. How are them Steelers doing today? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, their demos are always quite funny, but usually sports related. So it was like when they did that update, it now understands cricket scores. Great. Something that I'm probably never going to be asking it. So that was all cool. I mean, the iPad stuff was the big thing, I think, obviously.
Lots of nice stuff there.
Really, like, I mean, I think the, like you said, it's the little things. I mean, there are obviously some big features, like the files thing. I do love the files thing with all the different connections you can do to different services. But things like that drag and drop support is something, okay, it's not always bothered me. I don't come across it every day, but when I have ever done the split screen stuff, which is typically, if I've been working on a presentation, I've got Keynote up, I want to put some images in there. You know, you might put Safari on the right, do a search for some images, and then you've got a pain in the ass of how you get that image and save it to photos and all that crap. So to me, it feels like that, even though it's not a little change, it's a big change. It feels like when they introduce cut and paste, you know, it's something that's been missing that's now going to change the way you totally do things. You know, the fact that you can just drag, you can just drag a link, you can drag a piece of text, you can drag an image. I think it's a big, big thing. So I was quite pleased about that.
I liked that the developers of 1Password have already built in drag and drop support into their thing, which is quite an easy API. So they actually had it like running side by side, and they could just drag the username and password onto the form fields needs to go in. Because there's oftentimes, funnily enough, on Apple's own websites, when you use the autofill and it doesn't work, and it's like, and then you have to open the little extension again, authenticate with the Touch ID, choose the thing, and then copy each one and paste them manually. And it's so I'm glad for that. But also just the way that they do the panes, like how you can drag an app and put it where you want, so you can have it on the left hand side if you want, not the right hand side, and it's like in a little overlay pane. And if you've got one of the newer iPads, you can actually have three apps running at once. Well, technically
that's
four.
That's nice,
because you can have your major app, a split screen app on the side, you can have an overlay panel of another app, and then you can have picture in picture video as well.
Of course. Yeah.
Four apps. So that's pretty cool. It makes it a lot more useful. There's not many times where I need three apps at once, but being able to stick an app in a little pane and move it around is massively useful, because there are often times where I have something on the right hand side and I want to move it over to the left, for example. You just can't currently. So that's nice. The interesting thing is that due to a bug in the beta 1 of iOS 11, drag and drop is on the iPhone.
Oh, wow.
You can pick up a thing, whatever it might be, and if you double tap the home button to get into the switcher, you can then scroll through with your phone with the thing attached to it and then drop it into the app that you land on. So it is there, but Apple have already said, yeah, that's a bug. It's not on the iPhone, it's iPad only, but they obviously built it for both and have been testing it and then come up with like, yeah, it doesn't really work. And I can see why, because that is also a pain to do. It's a bit
clunky, exactly. Whereas when you've got a split screen, you know, when I have done stuff like that and I've had the split screen, it that would be really cool to be able to just drag across. So that does look very, very cool.
Even just like the new dock is quite nice the iPad. There's a lot of refinements to the look and feel of things. Like a small thing I noticed is that on the iPhone, there's no longer text under the icons in your dock, which is such a small thing. But like under an app, it'll say the app name. That isn't the case for the ones in the dock. So it just saves a little bit more space, which is kind of nice. Loads of little tiny details like that throughout the system that are better. And just new design stuff everywhere. They seem to be going with the Apple News, Apple Music, iOS 10 design style everywhere now, to the point that that is the default when you create a new app. So you don't have your centered title in the middle. You have a big one aligned to the left, which I personally really like, but a lot of people don't. There's a new control center. That's pretty cool.
That looks really nice. One panel.
Again, though, lots of people hate it, but for me, I use all three of the current panels frequently, like multiple times a day, because I will swipe up and I'll use the flashlight, or I want to change my brightness or jump to the calculator app or something, and then I have to swipe over and use the pause play for the music, and then again for all the HomeKit stuff. And it is a pain when you quickly say it's dark and I want to get the flashlight out. If I swipe up from the bottom and I'm on the third pane with my HomeKit stuff, it's like, swipe, poke. Now I've got the thing that I wanted. even more annoying if your phone's unlocked and then it's like, ooh, I need to quickly take a photo. Something is happening, you know, like a cute picture or something unexpected. Got to take a picture. And you swipe up and go to tap in the bottom right-hand corner and it's like, oh, I've just turned my lights off.
Yeah.
Because I'm on the wrong panel.
Yeah. And it's configurable as well.
Yeah. Loads of configuration options. Loads of
interesting it's really
things.
Nice.
Ability to record the screen currently.
Yeah, just I like that. The screenshot stuff is really good. The interesting thing, I'm just looking through a list of stuff that was on a Recode website. There was a recap. And they're talking about, obviously, Apple Pencil with the higher refresh rates of the new iPads. The lag time is going to be reduced, which is going to be nice. The AR stuff was interesting. I mean, I was not... you know, I said before, the day before I did the typical sort of bollocksy thing that you do, where you're, oh, we're not going to see this. I really wasn't expecting, and I wasn't expecting any VR AR stuff. And the main reason for that was I thought, well, basically, if something's big's going to happen with the iPhone 8 or 10 or Pro, whatever the hell they're going to call it, and there's going to be something around AR and the camera, then I just would have thought they'd have left it for that, because that's going to be your big reveal and your big, you know, showing off that feature. But what was really interesting for me was that I'm guessing they were demoing it on the new iPads, because that's what they would do. But you know, there's been demos that people have posted on Twitter with their existing hardware doing some AR kit demos. I think the default plane comes up and I don't know what iPad version they have, but it was not the new iPads, is my point, which means it's not dependent on the hardware of those new iPads. So that then gets me interested, because I'm thinking, well, if it's this good just with the old iPad cameras and stuff, is there going to be something that they're going to be doing with the iPhone 8 or iPhone Pro, whatever it is, that has some enhancement to the AR that takes what we've seen here to say, okay, this is really cool, but now this new iPhone comes with this that's going to make it even more interesting. So that's the only thing that got me.
One imagines it's
looked pretty cool.
It's more accurate, I think, on the iPhone 7 Plus, because then you've got two cameras, so it's got a lot more depth to work with. But I think it's a sliding scale. So on older, crappier hardware and cameras, it still works amazingly better than any of the other technology that's come this far. But if you've got the latest and greatest, then it's probably going to be that much bit better. Like the frame rate will be slightly higher, the anchoring will be better, and the scaling. So I can see why they've done it this way, because then you get a load of people make apps that use this. And then when they go, oh, here's a pair of AR glasses, or here's a thing that you can strap your phone to your face with so you can do this kind of thing even more, then suddenly you've already got all the content there to do it.
Well, so this is the other thing that got me interested as well. So I think we might have talked about this before about potential glasses and stuff. But what was interesting, and I might be completely wrong here, is these new iPads are going to have 120 hertz refresh. If an iPhone comes out that potentially has 120 hertz refresh as well, correct me if I'm wrong here, most of the time you're using an iPad or iPhone in it's a Retina display, so you're running it sort of in HDPI type mode, aren't you? Everything's using 2 pixels usually. Yeah. Now with thinking
3
out loud,
on the iPhone Plus.
Yes, exactly. So thinking out loud here, if I have a display now that could do 120 hertz, is it feasible for me to have an app running that can split those lines just like a 3D TV works to create two 60 hertz images that are stereoscopic that can then only be decoded by a passive or active glasses? Is that sounds like it could be feasible?
It is, but I don't think it's got anything to do with the hertz. The hertz are just how quickly they refresh, not the... Well, I suppose to a degree it does, because you can flip them quicker. But
it's
you can always do the two times thing.
But thinking like the daydream thing. You know, and the main reason I say this is on the TV that we've got, it's a passive display, so it's doing the split signal. But by splitting the signal, it's halving the resolution effectively. Because you're getting these. And now, when you watch it, it doesn't really bother you. If you watch it from the normal 10 feet away type thing, it doesn't bother you at all. It's got the 3D aspect to it. I don't see any lines. Obviously, with the daydream setup that I've got for the Pixel, you get that screen door effect. You get that. Because the resolution is just not good enough. You see the gaps between the pixels. So it's a different type of format because you're putting it right up to your face. So what's interesting to me is thinking that if they could do something with splitting the lines, splitting the image, and then have glasses that can, you're not necessarily strapping it to your face because you might then get the same problem as the Daydream, but you're looking at it from a normal range when you're holding it. So you're using passive or active glasses or whatever, then the image you're seeing is going to be, to all intents and purposes, the normal resolution that you might normally see, but it's now got 3D or AR, 3D and AR or something like that. But I guess it's just got me interested. You know, why would you, having the variable speed screen sounds great. You know, lowering it down if you're just looking at something static,
yeah,
or
battery life
speeding up. Yeah, and having super smooth and all that. But I just wonder. There's just part of me thinking, is there another reason for having this? And, you know, is this going to become clear when the iPhone X or whatever comes out later in the year?
See, I don't think that they're going to do anything with AR with the iPhone anytime soon, because, like, this whole fad of sticking an iPhone or a phone in a box and then stapping it to your face, I've tried it a few times and it's, you know, it works all right, but it's not brilliant.
Yeah.
For augmented reality, the whole point of it is that you're seeing the world through the cameras, and this seems to be a play to me for glasses, because traditionally with AR stuff, the digital things you put in the world, while they can look pretty good and they look like they're in the world, as soon as you move a little bit they jump around a bit because they're not completely anchored. It doesn't know enough about the environment to anchor it properly. Whereas this seems to have fixed that problem in quite a startling way, because that shit doesn't move. One of the demos I saw had like some text. I mean, the one when they showed it on stage, I thought, oh, that's pretty cool, but they're not moving very much and they're not ever panning away from what the anchor point is, the table. You're always seeing the table. He didn't like look up suddenly at a thing going over him and then look back down. But I have seen demos since of people doing it where they've got like a big line of text, like in a living room, and they're literally just panning around, turning around, coming back and stuff. And it's exactly where it is, and it isn't flickering or bouncing or vibrating. It's just there. And so if they can do that, then that means that augmented reality stuff, kind of like Google Glass, but better, whereby you have glasses on, but rather than stuff being on the lens, it looks like it's in the world. Is
that
certainly
could be cool.
Much more feasible, because that's exactly what they've done here. And whilst you could strap something to your face that uses the camera so that it doesn't feel like you've got something on your face, it's a clunky experience, as demonstrated perfectly by that awful Star Wars virtual reality bit where I literally bellowed with laughter when she walked into a wall. I don't know if you caught that, but at one point she was looking around and she just twatted her face right into the wall because she went, oh, go like that. And she literally recoiled a little bit. Yeah, because we couldn't see the wall because it was showing like the planet and everything.
Yes.
But there was one bit where she visibly smacked into the edge because she'd walked too far out of the safe zone. and that's the whole point. Like, I've used virtual reality and I love it, and it really is incredibly immersive. But it is so easy to... I remember holding the paddles of the HTC Vive in my hand because they turned into guns in the game that I was in, and I was looking at them going, this is so cool, because the one-to-one tracking was great. I was turning my hand around, I could like see all the reflections on this gun, and then I looked at it closer with my hand, and of course you've got like 10 inches of screen sticking out of your face, and I dragged it to my face quite hard to like look at it up close as if it was a real thing, so I was immersed. I just went boosh and just twatted it into the thing. It's like, oh, ow, okay, can't do that. So it's too clunky. I just don't see them doing it. I mean, they could. They've made cock-ups before, but to me, like glasses, where I see the world as I am now through my glasses and everything's fine, but then I could see something on my desk, even if it's just text or like a virtual monitor or something that's anchored, it's fine. I mean, the thing you were saying about the frame rate is correct. I mean, in virtual reality, displays are at 90 hertz because you need to be at 90 frames a second, because if you go below that, you will throw up everywhere. So it is crucial that they've got over that 60 hertz barrier, because if you have 120 hertz AR glasses, then that's going to look very, very impressive. And I would be very interested to see the iPad Pro, the new one, at 120 hertz doing the AR stuff, because I bet that looks really, really good.
Yeah.
But we'll just have to wait and see what happens with it, really. But it's interesting that they're doing it and making a push for VR, even if they're using AMD graphics, which is nowhere near as good as NVIDIA's stuff for this.
No. But it's also interesting that, you know, the technology they've got, you know, there's no additional hardware that's being used currently for this AR. You know, they're doing it with the existing iPads. They're showing it. We're seeing it working on existing iPads using this AR kit technology. So, you know, if you think about things like HoloLens and all these other things that are effectively strapping computers to your face, then it could possibly mean that any AR move they do down some glasses route means that these glasses wouldn't have to do very much other than recording what they're seeing and relaying that to a device like a iPad or iPhone or whatever, and then doing the AR bit through ARKit. So what you'll be wearing on your face, you know, could end up being what look like normal glasses with some little, you know, thick arms or whatever thing behind your ear, whatever the way they hide this stuff, and not something as obvious and terrible looking as Google Glass was. So it could, you know, and there's rumors about, I've seen some rumors about some glasses and running at a low resolution, almost like watch resolution, you know, so a tiny screen that would be projected into the lens or something, which sounds interesting. And it doesn't sound like it would be used for AR as in gaming, but it could be used for displaying stats and information just like the watch does, but just doing it in front of your eye, which, you know, could be an interesting move.
I was
totally impressed with the AR stuff. Was very, I love the idea, which I guess you could only do properly if you were wearing glasses, because you need, you know, with your hands free or whatever, if there was some devices to do that. But I love the idea of looking at like Minecraft and stuff on a table, you know, having a, and the, you know, my kids would love that, the ability to see that, just hold an iPad up and see a Minecraft building sitting on a table, or the Lego demo. Did you see the Lego demo?
Yeah, the Lego was pretty good.
That was the bit where he went, you know, inside the Batmobile, and then you could see the dashboard, and that was really awesome. I love that.
I mean, we've had AR for a long time. The only real difference here, and it is an important difference, because I was working on an AR project about 5 years ago. Like, I mean, even like Pokemon Go and stuff, obviously we've had this for a long time. The difference is that this is a system framework that is far superior to all of the custom-built ways of doing this previously. Like, it's just so much better for developing this stuff. You don't have to build your own AR engine. You've got all of that stuff, and stuff stays static. So it is impressive, but it's not groundbreaking, because we already had this previously. It's just that they've done it a lot better. But it definitely signals a strong interest in something for the future, whether that's glasses or a big goggle box thing that you strap on, or something else entirely. Like having stuff in the car on a holographic dashboard type thing. So lots of different things that you can do with it, but it's interesting that they've managed to basically leapfrog the competition in terms of this kind of stuff. Because like, Google has this whole framework for AR, but it only works with certain chips. What's it called? Tango, I think it's called. Tango.
Okay.
And that only works on certain devices because it's built into that. And it's slightly different in a lot of ways, but it's a very similar thing. And so when Apple said, oh, we now have the largest augmented reality platform in the world, they're not lying. It's impressive achievement. I think the only other thing to mention really about iOS 11 is the new App Store stuff, which they spent quite a bit of time on, which was, you know, it looks good. I don't think it's going to solve the problems of discoverability, and they've not gone all in with things like paid upgrades and things like that, although there are a few movements in that direction. But I was interested by the fact that you can basically have like promo copy and be able to push that in. And as a user, I love the idea of being able to open up my phone and sort of see a today view of, oh, here's stuff that we think you'll like, here's stuff that's launched today, here's
that's cool,
you know, tips and tricks, and maybe updates you've missed for games that you already have. That they've split games and apps separately is a very sensible idea, because it's always a pain when you're looking at the App Store front page and it's just full of games. It's like, I'm not interested in any of them. I just want to see apps. So it seems like a fairly solid update.
Yep, I agree. I mean, they didn't show searching, which was a shame, because searching has always been the pain in the arse ever since they updated it with those massive, great search result panels that come up. But yeah, I mean, any changes they can make there would be would be good. And I like, yeah, I like the idea of the separate tabs, and the today thing is quite nice. Anything that just is this whole information thing, there's just too much. There's too much stuff there. There's too much stuff bombarded at you. So anything that can help you discover stuff better is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I have very, very little to add to that. So I guess the only thing that was left was the HomePod. Now I didn't actually watch it. Because while I was watching the thing live, I was also making dinner, and obviously it was like over 2 hours long.
Yes.
So by the time it got to like 7:45, I was like, I need to eat now. I turned it off about halfway through it must have been, they were showing off the iPad enhancements to iOS, I think is when I started to tune out. And so all the stuff about the HomePod I've seen from their website and from reading Twitter and stuff like that. So I'm not quite as au fait with it as I should be. But my understanding is that it's basically a very, very, very nice speaker, probably better than a Sonos Play 3, but it costs 50 quid more than a Sonos Play 3. But then it's also got Siri built into it.
Exactly. So I think the interesting thing that came out of my sort of impression of it when it was announced was that this is not a, it's not a Siri speaker. You know, it's not a Siri, it's not a primarily a Siri device like Amazon, what have I called her? Yeah, okay, Amazon Echo, that's okay. She won't activate.
I think she did. Oh, is that Siri?
I don't know, something's kicked off.
That sounds like male Siri to me.
I don't know. Hold on. It's my iPad. My iPad 12.9 is now giving me market information. So the interesting thing was they were basically saying this is primarily, I mean, the dingus bit wasn't even mentioned until towards the end. It was, this is a speaker. This is a really good speaker that, you know, you can beam from your devices, you can play music, you can do all these cool things. It's got all this technology for with beamforming, and it, you know, can work out the shape of the room and the best way to play the music. It's got supposedly amazing capability that while it's playing music, even at a distance, it can still hear you say the activation word, all of this stuff. Oh, and by the way, it also does this. I think it looks pretty cool. I mean, it looks like a small Mac Pro. It's a nice design, comes in white and black. I will undoubtedly get one or two because I'm a sucker for that sort of stuff, and it will be interesting to see how it compares to the lady in a tube.
Lady in a tube. I think that's a very different product, Jason.
No. Well, it's how I've seen other people describe her. So you've got to use all those
I've
different
never
words.
Heard that before.
The lady in a tube, yeah. Yeah. But no, I think it looked pretty cool. And it works. It's similar, apparently, to the Sonos stuff where it is a mono speaker. So you buy it and it's a mono speaker, but if you put two in a room and link them up, then you get stereo and, you know, surround or whatever. So it'll be interesting to have a play. The pricing's interesting because it's not as expensive as I thought it would be. But again, this is another.
It's about where I thought it would be.
Yeah. I'm interested in seeing what it will like. So my setup in the kitchen is I've got the little 10-inch, one of these little 10-inch screens that's like a field screen for camera stuff that you can hook up to video cameras. So that's got the Apple TV strapped to the back, and then I use the old Apple Stereo, which is on top of the cupboard, with a little Bluetooth gizmo that lets me beam the sound to that, and it works great. And that's where the sound comes out. I did try it with the Echo, but it's just not as good. The speaker's not as good.
We've talked about this before. Like, one of the reasons that I've gone with Sonos recently is because it streams the music directly. I'm not streaming it from my phone. It's doing it. And my understanding is that this does the same thing with Apple Music.
Exactly.
So, but can you put apps on it or anything like that? Or did they not mention that kind of stuff? Because obviously an app like Spotify could be updated to say AirPlay to that speaker or AirPlay to multiple speakers. But can it? Is it streaming it directly or is it streaming it from your phone? Like, if I start watching a YouTube video, is it then going to start streaming that to the speaker like it does currently? That's the bit I'm not clear on, and would be a deal breaker for me.
Well, there was no mention
of apps. I'm not getting it anyway.
But what's interesting is that this thing, I think it said it ran an A9, was it? Or an A...
A8, this one.
A8. So it's running a pretty powerful processor. And I would imagine...
It's the same as the Apple TV.
Yeah, so I'm trying to work out how you'd configure this thing. I'm imagining there's going to be a HomePod app, or you do it through the Home app or something. There's going to be some way to configure this thing. So whilst it's probably unlikely...
I know what it'll be like. It'll be like AirPods. It'll be that little... Put it near it.
It could be like that.
But I bet it'll be that.
But if there's an app of some kind, then maybe there could be something like the Watch app where you can configure it with... Because that would be interesting, is if you could say, you know, there's a HomePod version of Spotify or whatever. It's that whole thing of whether they'd allow that because they want to push Apple Music. But having said that, you know, they've done it with other devices. So it's something
See, I don't
that whether
understand,
it's...
In... Like, does it pair to a phone? Like, if I say create a reminder with things to it, how is it going to? Because it, if it doesn't...
That's what I mean. So is it...
Yeah,
is
it can't
going
run apps
your...
because... You couldn't install apps on it because that would be shit. I mean, it'd just be a terrible experience trying to install apps on a speaker.
So,
I think that'd be there. Does it just talk to your phone somehow? Does it send a push through the Wi-Fi?
But also, does it just link through? Is it your iCloud account, and therefore it goes through your? It's somehow, you know, because you've set it up from this phone. I can now say, you know, link to my calendar and stuff through some interface, and now it's got all my calendar details, whatever. But then how does it deal with things like, you know, Apple are big on the family sharing stuff. They've got this family sharing and family music account. So how does that work? Can anybody go up and say, you know, the problem is with the Echo at the moment is that, you know, you can switch profiles, but it doesn't do voice recognition in terms of who it's talking to. So in theory, and I'm glad I haven't told them this yet, the kids could start adding appointments to my damn calendar just by saying, you know, do an event, and it's just going to stick it in my calendar because my calendar's hooked up to it. So that sort of stuff will be interesting, I guess, to see what happens there. I mean, ultimately, it would be good if it could be connected in some way that, you know, Hannah could say, what am I doing today? And it's going to identify her voice, or maybe it identifies her because she's close to the speaker and she has a phone. And so it knows it's probably her because I'm not there. There's a proximity thing going on. I don't know, but it's going
to
be interesting.
The bit I don't understand is that they're making a big push with Siri being able to control apps on your phone, like pay whoever with PayPal, whatever it might be, or book me a car with Uber. So I don't understand how that would work on a speaker, A, would be the first point. And then B would be if there is some kind of way that you could say, start playing this with Spotify. On the phone at the moment, you're obviously AirPlay and you say, play this music on that speaker and it beams it. If I switch to a different app and play a video or something, it starts playing that instead.
Yeah.
So there may be some extension point in the future where it can, similar to Sonos, not be an app that you install, but something that the app can configure somehow. It's very confusing. I don't understand the majority of this speaker. I find it an odd product. I can appreciate that they've labeled it HomePod, because if it was called like Siri Pod or Siri something, that sells it as more of a Siri device, whereas now Siri is kind of secondary to it. It's a speaker. So I see them doing a speaker, that's fine. But a lot of people are like, oh, this is a Sonos killer. And I'm like, well, it's not. Because
it's not, no.
It's a very different thing. And I just have so many questions about it. But chief among them is, why would I want this Siri aspect of it if I already have a phone and a watch? Because the phone, well, especially the watch is always with me. And the watch is cheaper than the speaker. So if That's I'm true. Walking around, I can tell my watch to do stuff. Like, if I have one of these speakers in my kitchen and I'm in the bedroom, I'm gonna have to go downstairs and speak to it, whereas if I had the watch, I can just raise my wrist and speak to Siri. I don't understand this whole thing for speakers that you can speak to. For anything, like if I walk through my house, I can just raise my wrist and say, turn the downstairs lights on, and they come on. I don't get why you would need a speaker to do that, unless you didn't have the Apple Watch. In which case, it's just offering a different way of doing the same thing. But for people that are like, oh, it's a Sonos killer, or oh, this is the best way of using Siri, I'm like, it's not. It's not that.
I don't know, obviously, I've only got the experience that I've got, but I guess from my experience, it's having a family where you've got several people in the house, then it's not just me with my watch, it's the kids' ability to just play some music. I mean, Leo, I had to turn Flo Rida off this morning that he'd left running on his... and the little dot in his room, because he sort of wakes up, play songs by Flo Rida or whatever, Bomb Funk MCs or something, and he's only eight and he only finds some of this stuff out through films or because I've told him. But anyway, So they love all that stuff. I mean, we actually, as a side note, we actually took the Alexa camping, which was quite funny. Crap, I shouldn't have said that. That's okay. So I, in the one we've got in the kitchen, with the one we've got in the kitchen, I bought this little like a power bank thing that it could sit on, like a little stand, and it only adds like a tiny bit of bulk to the bottom of the device, but it acts as a power charger for the device and anything you plug in, like your phone or whatever. So basically it means you can unplug it from the wall and take it outside and it's still connected because it's still on because it's getting its power from the power bank. And it's just like a stand basically. But what was really cool is we took it camping and set it up on that router that I bought, which was interesting for two reasons. One, it worked great. And for some reason, it seemed to accept commands that I was giving it to do with the house, which was interesting. So I could say, you know, turn off the living room lights. Now, I didn't check if it worked. I didn't actually look at the cameras to see if it had worked, to be fair. But she did say, okay, which is interesting because I thought, well, how does that work? Because my lights, that must mean that there's a communication. There's either communication going on from the one at the campsite back to the Alexa system. Oh, crap. It's okay. Back to the Amazon.
This is a fine example of what I'm talking about, why I don't want a speaker in every room of my house. Because you can't say a damn thing without anchoring. My watch doesn't do it unless I raise it.
Exactly. So I was saying to her, switch off the living room lights. And I didn't check where they were going off, but it didn't give me an error. It didn't say, I can't find that device. It said, okay, which to me means it did it. So I don't know how they're doing that, but somehow they're obviously going from the cloud back to the house or whatever. But yeah, it was that was pretty amazing. But the kids love it.
I can sort of see that in a family setting that you have a thing that you can speak to. I can appreciate that in a way. But then as you say, like with all the privacy and having multiple accounts, it gets very messy. Yeah. Whereas obviously if you've all got Apple Watches, then you just speak to that and everyone's got their own thing. It seems odd. The final thing I wanted to mention about the HomePod is, again, odd that they're announcing it 6 months in advance.
Yeah.
Like, I guess maybe this is similar to the watch or the phone where FCC filings have to be made and it would be released by someone else. Or maybe they want to announce it before it's leaked because they want to control it. Like, maybe they're not so fussed about if the Apple Watch 3 gets leaked because there's not much you can do about it having to ramp stuff up in advance and they'll just release it when it's ready. But with a new product, they want to control the media impression of it, I guess. So maybe that's why they're doing it. But a bit weird to release announce it so far in advance.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I guess there's the FCC thing to take into account. Maybe they're doing it. I mean, maybe they've got most of this stuff done and built and working and everything, but maybe they're doing it to see what the reaction is, to see whether people are saying, oh, you know, is it going to do this? Is it going to do that? And almost get like feedback before they've actually launched the thing, especially if some of that stuff can be done through software or, you know, firmware tweaks or whatever. But yeah, it's interesting. It's also, it's very, I mean, it's unusual for them to be announcing anything anyway, but they've done it before with, I guess, with the iPhone launch and with the first Apple Watch. But with that, you know, with the Mac Pro stuff they did recently, obviously with the iMac Pro announcement and with the HomePod, it's interesting. I mean, I guess you've got to say, well, without the iMac Pro and the HomePod stuff, would it still have been a big keynote in terms of content? I guess it would because they've got iPads. But it's certainly...
Well, it was very, very long. They probably could have spent more time talking about some of the iOS stuff. And,
yeah.
And we've not even mentioned half of the developer stuff, like new Xcode, which is crazy better. Loads and loads and loads of improvements for developer stuff that they could have talked about. There's no need to fill it out with all this. In fact, it's kind of impressive that they announced three new hardware products.
Yeah.
The HomePod, the iMac Pro, and the iPad 10.5. They also managed to do minor bumps to their entire MacBook lineup, minor bump for the iMac, and release four major pieces of software all in one keynote. Like, it was packed. And there's still bits coming out now where it's like, oh, that's a big deal that no one mentioned at the time.
Exactly. The nice thing for me is the fact that there's going to be, you know, the thing that always bothered me about the iPad Pros was the fact that they were out of sync. You know, the first iPad Pro came out, then the 9-inch came out with better features and screen than the 12.9, and at least now there's some parity. We've got two that have been released that are effectively the same, just, you know, one is bigger than the other one, which is very cool. So I'm looking forward to getting those on Tuesday. I think they come, hopefully. So should be good.
Yeah, I just looked at buying one, and the 15th of June now.
Oh, really? It's not too bad.
not sure. Probably won't bother. But I am tempted. That probably will change by the time we record next.
Exactly. All right, sounds like a good time to finish up.
Yep, we'll leave it there with that.
Cool.
Yeah. I've started losing the power of speech just because I'm still trying to understand the HomePod and how it works and why, and I don't get it, but maybe we'll know something more next time.
Cool.
Awesome. Right, I'll speak to you next time.
Yeah, see you, Ben. Cheers.